mass of lifeless tissues, ladies and gentlemen, may I present, for your intellectual and philosophical pleasure,
crude, yes, primitive, yes, perhaps even grotesque, yet something inexplicable tells me that this might be our man.
It's going to be very popular.
Get ready!
James' show is on in less than 1 minute.
Fly! Fly, do you hear me? Give my creation!
Southwest Florida, your official lie detector is here. Now, your wait is over. This is the Guy James Show. This is the Guy James Show. The Guy James Show, America's number one Democratic talk show. You've heard from the radical right. Now all that's left is the truth. Now here's Guy James.
Karen Hughes tonight, something she said in her book, and the London bombings, of course, and of course, who can forget what Congressman Tancredo from Colorado said this week about blowing up the... Oh, man, how could anybody be so absolutely stupid? as what he said this week about the, taking out the Muslims' holy sites. We have Limbaugh and the like on the air talking about Dick Durbin and them saying things that incites terrorists. And then we talk about taking out the holy sites. Oh, yeah, that is a smart move. And he won't apologize for it or anything. And, of course, we're going to touch on, boy, I'll tell you, John McCain this week. I'm losing more respect for John McCain every single day. I used to like John. I still like John McCain. I mean, I think he's a fine man and all that. But he's beginning to be a typical politician. For a while, I thought he wasn't a typical politician, but he's starting to lick Bush's boots for him, and boy, I hate that. I hate that when I see that happen, but you know why he's doing it. She certainly do. I want to say hello to everybody out there tonight, all of our friends on Democratic Underground, the Turtles down at Naples, Florida, all the local listeners here. I don't know what happened last week. We got a huge volume of mail from all over the world, as a matter of fact. We heard from Vietnam, from Australia, from France, from Finland, from the good old UK, just all over the place. And they are all either tuned into the Guy James Show right now or listen to it on our good friend Ben Birch's WhiteRoseSociety.org. And you can always catch the show there as well. So I don't know what happened, but we certainly got a great international audience last week, and they loved the show, and we hope to provide a lot of good content for them this week. So much happening this week. You don't know where to start. Of course, some of it just happened, and some of it, as you well know, wink, wink, was planned, huh? Some of it was planned. You know what? It didn't work. It absolutely didn't work. The Bush administration tried to get the Karl Rove plame gate or treason gate or whatever you want to call it, tried to get that off the front pages, and they gave it their best shot, and it didn't work. Well, for a day or so, the nomination of John Roberts dominated the news, but the Rove scandal came right back to the top, and it now appears that the Rove story actually does have some legs, and it's not going to go away unless it's proven that there's nothing to it, in which case it'll die a natural death. But I think we all know by now there is a lot to it. We all know that there is something to it, and some of us surmise that there's a lot more to it than first meets the eye. I think that's very evident. Way back when, a couple of years ago, when I first heard of this story, I figured that it went way beyond Rove, and now I'm absolutely sure of it, and I believe it goes all the way to Scooter Libby and ultimately to Dick Vader Cheney. And maybe even Bush himself. And if you think about it, it's really hard to believe that this gang didn't sit around on Air Force One the day they had that State Department memo that we all know they had now, where Valerie claims about her was marked secret. All the RNC people coming out and all the talking heads saying, oh, there was nothing secret about it. Oh, no, the State Department memo itself on Air Force One had that part marked secret. So no more BS, please. Don't even try it. It was secret about Valerie Plame. And if you think about it, it is hard to believe that this gang didn't sit around Air Force One that day, that they had that State Department memo and just trashed both of them. And we hear Ari Fleischer was reading it. We heard Colin Powell read it. And especially since Wilson had the cojones to say something other than the Bush line about the yellow cake deal in Niger. You know, that just had to infuriate them. And lest you think they're a bunch of choir boys and girls, just remember when Mr. Clark talked about Roe being upset with someone in the administration who didn't toe the party line, saying we're going to... Well, let me just say it as delicately as I can. Roe was quoted as saying about a party official he was unhappy with, we're going to F him worse than anybody has ever F'd him. That is Karl Rove's attitude. That is George Bush's attitude. Isn't that a great attitude for the mouthpiece of the President of the United States to have? Doesn't that give you some kind of a idea as to the hypocrisy exuding from this White House? And it's just dripping out of there. Good Christian people behaving like that. They actually have much of America believing that they're good, Christian, moral, ethical people. Well, now it's out in the open. And they're not what they tried to be and what they pretended that they are. They're not the goody two-shoes folks that many, you know, the Christian fundamentalists would like to believe they are. They're not the best. They're not the brightest. And they're certainly not the most ethical and honest. This is one of those times that reminds me of some restaurant experiences I've had. And I'll bet some of you have, too. I bet you have, Johnny and Lila and Erica. I'll bet you've all had this experience. I can remember a half a dozen times or so in my life where I went to a really nice restaurant. I'm thinking of a couple right now in particular in Columbus, Ohio. I went to a really great restaurant for a great dinner, and I was enjoying myself until I accidentally got a look at their kitchen. And then I never went back. And I'd been to these restaurants a lot of times, but once I saw their kitchen, I never went back. You see, out in the dining area, these places were beautiful, with crystal and silver and linen tablecloths and all the fine furnishing. They looked to be the best that money can buy. However, when I got to see their kitchens, it was another story. Filthy and unsanitary conditions everywhere you look. Food on the floor, equipment that hadn't been cleaned for days, personnel dressed in filthy clothes. The worst imaginable scenario for a kitchen at a fine restaurant. And that kind of reminds me of the Bush administration. When they first took office, they put their best foot forward and built this facade that looked just like the restaurant I spoke of. Everything in the new administration was fine linen, crystal, silver, and beautiful furnishing. You know, and a lot of people were really impressed. That is, until they got a look behind the scenes and saw the filth and corruption behind the scenes in the Bush kitchen. Many people wanted to believe that Bush was doing the right thing by going to war until they got to see what went on behind the curtain and realized that it was all smoke and mirrors aimed at fooling the American people. We now know that to be a fact. And for a long, long while, they got away with it. A lot of people just didn't want to think this administration was corrupt, and they wouldn't accept the facts. And oh yes, they saw that Bush and his pals were not completely honest on a couple of issues, but finally they saw through the smokescreen and they realized that they could not believe him on any issue. They finally saw that everything Bush and his people put forth as truth is in some way or another just BS aimed at fooling the public. They finally saw their dirty kitchen. And most of the people don't want any more of it. And that's proven by the polls that are out right now. Several commentators made statements on their radio shows this past week about how ridiculous it was that some Democrats said this nomination at this time was a wag the dog episode. They went on and on about how silly people are that believe that Bush would intentionally time this nomination in order to deflect the press and the public away from the Plamegate scandal. But now we know better, don't we? We sure do. We know that some prominent Republicans were also sure that that's what was happening. You take David Gergen, for example. As much as I hate to say it, because he's a big-time Republican, always has been and always will be, but I'll say one thing about David Gergen. David Gergen has proven to me over the years that if something comes out of his mouth, it's the truth. I believe David Gergen because when his side's wrong, he says they're wrong. And when the Democrat, you know, I like David Gergen. We don't agree politically on things, but the man's honest. And he's about as fair in his comments as anyone in Washington could ever be, really. I believe he always calls a spade, and he sure called it on this one. Hey, it was a good political move. Unethical as hell, but a good move politically nonetheless. Wag the dog? Absolutely. I knew it would happen nearly a week before it did. I knew it. My Republican sources, whom I admit are very disenchanted with George Bush, told me a week ahead of time that he would do this, he would absolutely do this when it got too hot for Karl Rove to take the pressure off. Well, guess what? It happened, and it happened right as predicted by my sources, but it didn't work. They thought it'd take the Plamegate story right out of the news for good, and it didn't work. They blew it. My good friend and I had a discussion yesterday morning about this story, and he said no one cares about the Karl Rove story. I disagree. I think a lot of people care about it. But I do think that this is just not about Karl Rove. Certainly not. This is about something much larger than that, and I believe it goes right up the chain of command all the way to the top, and that is what will get the attention of the voting public. If this leads to Cheney's doorstep, which I really believe it does, it will awaken the American public and prove once and for all that this administration is the most corrupt in our history, no question about it. No, this story isn't just about some wayward rogue presidential advisor doing some political dirty work. It's about the Bush administration being infected with corruption from top to bottom. And the American public has a right to know that, and when they do, it's going to be lights out for Bush and his people, mark my word. They will not stand for this. They will not stand for it. When Richard Nixon pulled stuff not nearly as serious as this, the public wouldn't stand for it, and they won't stand for this. What do you think? I would like to hear what you think. 888-602-7500, 7501, 7502, 7503, and 7504. I'd like to know what you have to say, whether or not you think this was a wag the dog story. I don't think there's any question about it. None. None whatsoever. Many people around Washington were saying that it was, and inside the Beltway, it's well known that they pulled this off to try and, you know, the nomination. You tell me something. When's the last time that a president, any president, called a 9 o'clock in the evening primetime news conference to announce a nomination for the Supreme Court of the United States? Tell me when the last time that was. I sure don't remember it, and no one I know remembers it. So this was a political ploy. That's all there was to it. Plain and simple. Don't know how else to say it. By their fruits ye shall know them. And do men gather grapes of thorns or figs of thistles? That's in the book of Matthew. By their fruits and the fruits of this administration, my, is some rotten fruit. Some very, very rotten fruit. And the stench is getting to be overwhelming. Absolutely overwhelming. I hate to say that. A lot of you think I might take pleasure in that. I do not. I would like to say that this president and his administration were moral and ethical and living up to the expectation of the American public as any president should do. I'm an American. I want any president to do the best job possible. I don't care if he's a Republican or a Democrat. Of course, I'd rather have a Democrat in politically to serve my needs and the people of the Democratic Party. Of course I would. But I've always been behind any president we had. I was behind this man's father. I was behind Ronald Reagan. I was behind Richard Nixon until he proved he didn't deserve our respect. I most certainly loved Dwight Eisenhower when I was a kid. But this is a different story. This is something I've never seen before. This is something America has never seen before. And I'm so sorry for America that this country's taken the direction it is right now under this administration. It's a very sad fact. And you know who's at fault? You know who's at fault? We are. You and I and everybody that's allowed this to go on. Because we don't have to allow this to go on. Certainly not. We can put a stop to it. But we have not. And we've been... We've been okay with it. We've just said, well, you know, sooner or later he'll be out of office and this will all be over with. But that's not good enough. That most certainly is not good enough. And it's the fault of Americans everywhere. Those that voted for this man, those that are putting up with his antics in the White House and his administration. No administration should put up with what is going on right now, this cover-up that's going on. I absolutely believe it's a conspiracy. It's a conspiracy at the top. I think it'll be proven. There's no doubt in my mind they'll prove the conspiracy over it, and I think this leads right to Dick Cheney's door. We're going to see. Well, let's go to the phone, and let's talk to Diane in North Fort Myers.
Hi, yes, Diane. You sound good, as always. No, I was calling because it has been a busy week, but today earmarks the third anniversary to today. Of the Downing Street memo, when it was very first done and released. And isn't it odd that the American people didn't find out about it until, what, within the last, what, several months?
Yeah,
here
and,
in America?
And most of them have forgotten about it already.
People knew about it.
Yeah.
Okay, and then we got Scott Ritter. Remember him? He was the Marine who was a Republican, voted for W., but he was the one that was one of the UN inspectors over there looking for the big weapons of mass destruction, telling them that they had been destroyed, and to keep the inspectors in there to keep on looking. But then they turn around and they dirty dogged him. I always say it's Karl Rove. Karl Roved him, just like they did with Joe Wilson and so many others. Like you said a long time ago, how true. They eat their own. And have you listened to Michael Savage this week at all, that maniac?
Oh, I did hear a little
God.
Bit. Yeah.
Why isn't that man in court for hate crimes?
Yeah.
I mean, this is ridiculous.
He's nuts. I mean, there's no doubt in my mind the guy's
unbelievable.
Whack.
You know, he's like the Howard Beale of the movie Network. Before he goes into the board meeting for the little meeting with the guy that tells him how it is. Well, you know, America is like that right now. They're watching the Howard Beale show and just loving every word of it, being gullible, not looking, like you said, what's behind the real curtain there? What's going on in those back rooms of the boardrooms? You know, it's big, and you know it is, Guy, and it goes beyond parties. It goes beyond this government, even.
It goes way beyond parties, Diane. You're absolutely right. They're playing the old New York City back alley shell game with the public right now.
Because I know you're a diehard Democrat, and I know that you're a John Kennedy Democrat.
Yeah.
But the problem is, I don't see them anymore.
No.
I don't see them. That's why I will not even say I'm a Democrat. My parents were always Democrats. My dad was union. I worked union before. But I consider myself anti-imperialization, like, which is what Mark Twain was and Tom Dewey. Because
yeah.
I'm against all this and what's going on when you're going around the world kicking little people down so you can use them as slaves for a certain few to make big, big bucks off of. And everyone thinks that we're going to get the oil in Iraq and control the oil in Iraq and, gee, America will have cheap price. Don't they realize that Halliburton, if they get a hold of that oil, that you'll probably be paying $100 a gallon? I mean, look at what they're charging with Kellogg Brown Root right now per meal.
Oh, yeah.
For outdated food to our soldiers. But, oh, they're patriotic and they support our soldiers. Come on, America. Come on, get real. Quit listening to Michael Savage, because he doesn't know either, I guess. He needs to go to the boardroom.
Well, that's absolutely certain.
But, Guy, you stick it out there. You stick it out because, hey, you are a lone voice in a wilderness. And, I mean, the people are asleep, but somebody's got to be awake. And I'm glad that the light switched on in your house.
Well, Diane, thanks for calling.
Thanks, Guy.
We're glad to have you with us. Very glad to have you with us. I'm told some of you on the internet are having a little bit of audio problems. Let me know if you are on the Guy James thread on there. I see some of it are some of you seem to be getting it all right, and some of you aren't. So post it if you're having a problem. Want to hear from you. Don't forget, we got Pierce O'Donnell coming up at 6:35. It's going to talk about his book In Time of War. Pierce O'Donnell is he's a great author and a heck of a guy. One of the top 100 attorneys in the country, and a very, very fine author too, I might mention. How many of you saw once again this week, before the Roberts nomination, they went out and tried to savage Joe Wilson again? Oh, they worked so hard. I want to issue a challenge right now. Are there any of my right-wing friends listening tonight? I know there are. I want you to call me, and I want you to give me proof of one thing Joe Wilson has said that is a lie. We all know they have gone on the internet, they've gone on the news, they've gone on the cable news, the network news, any place they could get FaceTime. Ken Melman from the RNC, he's been the leader of the pack. But all the right-wing talkers, liar, 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 liar. That's all we've heard about Joe Wilson. I want you to call me and give me proof of even one lie Joe Wilson told. Even one. And you won't. You know why? Because Joe Wilson told the truth on every last detail of what he's talked about so far. Joe Wilson has proven, we'll get into it a little later on, but there's been one thing after another that they've accused him of lying about.
And he's been, I've checked everything out. There's not one thing, not one single thing that he has lied about in this whole sorry deal. Not one. But if you're listening and you want to call in and you think you've got something on Joe Wilson, I'd like for you to let us know. It's so easy for everybody to get on TV and get on radio and say the man's a liar without any proof. And they cite this quote and that quote, and I've looked them all up, every single one of them. And I've gone back and looked up transcripts and audio and video of Joe Wilson saying the things they said he said, and he never said them. Let me give you an example. They were trumpeting all over the news one particular day this past week that Joe Wilson admitted, they said, he admitted that his wife was no longer undercover the day the Rove article came out. You all heard him say that, right? No longer undercover the day, you know, they trumpeted that around every place they could get that out. Old Melman got on TV every show he could and put that out. Yeah, you know what he was saying? The day that came out, she was no longer undercover because he blew her cover. That's why she was no longer undercover the day that article came out. It wasn't that she hadn't been undercover during this time. No, the day Novak's article came out, that was the day her undercover status changed because he outed her with the help of Karl Rove. You're listening to The Guy James Show. And we're going to come right back in just a couple of minutes. Have a lot for you. We're going to have Pierce O'Donnell on after we come back. I hope you'll stay with us. Don't go away.
This is The Guy James Show. James Show would like to thank the following listeners for their support and welcome them to the growing army of clear-thinking Americans who have contributed to the nation's only listener-supported Democratic radio talk show. Ann Ross, New York, New York. Luciano Rossetti, Cape Coral, Florida. Alice Knowlton, Milford, Massachusetts. Dave Goggin, Eureka, California. Annette Fenner, Marysville, Washington. Joe and Nancy Vogel, St. Paul, Minnesota. Juan Puerto, Fort Myers, Florida, Sarah Kay, Santa Fe, New Mexico, and Marcia Johns, Merritt Island, Florida. To join the growing list of those that support The Guy James Show, log on to theguyjamesshow.com and make a contribution. Or send your contribution to The Guy James Show, 12870 Trade Way 4, number 108, Bonita Springs, Florida, 34135.
Welcome back to the BuzzFlash.com GOP Hypocrite of the Week. The only thing that George W. Bush has succeeded at in life is failure. And now the United States and the whole world has paid the price. When you are born into an elitist, wealthy family, you expect, like kings and queens, total loyalty regardless of your ability. That is the essence of Bushivism. Protect the dynasty. Say whatever you have to say, do whatever you have to do, but protect the Dauphin Prince at all costs. So it doesn't matter to the Bushevics that our soldiers, Iraqis, and foreigners are dying in an endless quagmire, a terrorist heaven that Bush created in a colossal blunder. They can't admit their mistake because Bush's credibility is solely built upon his stubborn delusions, which the press spins as resolve. Bush ran for office in 2000, deriding that Clinton allegedly ran the government by polls, while Bush asserted that he would only rule by morally sound principles, whatever the fickle public might think. Only it isn't true. This is perhaps the most focus group poll-driven administration in history. In fact, the Washington Post reported the origins of Bush's current mantra of, "We are committed to winning in Iraq." Yes, the very same White House that outwardly exudes contempt for polls has in fact recently hired a prominent academic pollster onto the National Security Council staff and has concluded that the key to public support for the war is not the number of casualties in Iraq, nor whether the war was right or wrong, but whether people feel like we're going to win. So it's not about fighting terrorism or about the unnecessary loss of life and limb. It's, as usual, about Bush, the spoiled rich kid who believes the world revolves around him. And so the man who said he would never make decisions by polls is continuing a war that makes no sense by using findings from polling about how to sell a failure. That's hypocrisy on a tragic scale. A hypocrisy that has brought death, torture, and catastrophic injuries into far too many families to count. There are some hypocrisies that can just never be forgiven. This is one of them. Until next week, remember our motto at BuzzFlash.com. So many Republican hypocrites. So little time. Catch up with you soon.
Southwest Florida, your official lie detector is here. Now, your wait is over. This is the Guy James Show. The Guy James Show. The phone lines are open. Call 1-888-602-7500. 7501, 02, 03, and 04. Right now and chime in.
War crimes and so forth, Mr. Pierce O'Donnell. Pierce, are you with us?
Great to be with you today, guys.
Well, it's awfully glad to have you. Now, you're with us from California, right?
Yeah, it's about 85 degrees here in Santa Barbara this afternoon.
Well, a beautiful day in Santa Barbara, and it is here in Florida as well, as usually both these places.
Well, I'm delighted to be on your show.
Well, we've got a lot to talk about, I got to tell you, if I didn't like your book, I'd just tell you. I would. I'm that kind of a guy. I'd say, you know, Pierce, this book this is a killer book. It really is. And what caused you to write this book?
Well, actually, somebody gave me a magazine article at the Millennium, December 99, about this obscure trial that nobody knew anything about. And I write movies as well as books, and looking for a fun movie. And I said, gosh, this is a movie, you know. Nazis captured, army colonel has to defend him against his will, but does a brilliant job, and six are executed. And I thought it was a taut sort of Breaker Morant meets A Few Good Men, if you will, as we talk in Hollywood. And then 9/11, I was writing the screenplay, 9/11 hit, and Bush came out with his military orders saying, I have the power to lock anybody and everybody, citizen and non-citizen alike, put them in prison indefinitely, and the Supreme Court, courts can't do anything about it. And after all, Roosevelt did it in 42. And I said, whoa. So I called my agent. I said, Alice, I think we have a book before we have a movie. And I didn't stop for 3 years, Guy, to finish the book.
Well, I think we got kind of a bad phone line going here right now. Are we
okay now?
Yeah.
Yeah, anyways, I spent 3 years writing the book.
Okay, 3 years. Now, that's a long time as books go, isn't it?
Probably is. I've written my other books quicker, but I couldn't stop researching civil liberties and prior war times and finding more and more material about what happened in 42. And then we had 9/11 and those events which I wanted to chronicle. So it was actually a labor of love.
Well, I don't want to mislead people about this book. You know, I think even watching, looking at the cover on the book, a person could be misled slightly with, you know, the Hitler's terrorist attack on America. They might think that's all about, but it's got some fascinating details of what went on then, but it comes right into today's problems that we have with our prisons and so forth.
Yes, it does. You know, when the president said that what happened in 42 supports what he was going to do and is doing, I knew that was partially true, but mostly not true. But I figured the best way is let the reader read what happened in 42. I try to write it like a novel, though it's all, as you know, a true story. And the last three chapters, I bring it forward to today.
Well, am I wrong in reading your book? It appears to me that the Nazi war criminals got a lot more fair trial and fair treatment than some of the people in Gitmo and Abu Ghraib are now.
Well, it's ironic. We hadn't had the war in court or the criminal law revolution and a lot more rights to criminals, but in 1942, they got speedy charges. They had a top defense counsel. They had what I consider to be a fair trial since all eight of them had confessed. They got an appeal to the U.S. Supreme Court, and then the ultimate sanction was imposed on six of them. They had confidential attorney-client communications, access to their attorneys. There was no abuse or anything like that. And you contrast it today. We're now on the fourth anniversary of people in Guantanamo who have not had charges, don't have counsel, and no prospect of a trial. And it's an entirely different and, I think, outrageous situation.
Well, I think one of the most fascinating paragraphs, I think, or pages I've ever read in a book came when, after the trial was over, the Nazi criminals, and after they were summarily rounded up one day and electrocuted, all six of them, in about an hour and a half,
right,
that the attorney went back to his desk and found a letter there from the executed prisoners thanking him for giving them a fair representation and a fair trial.
Yeah, and a tear went down his eye, and this was a tough mother, if I can say that on radio. Colonel Royal was 6'5", the best trial lawyer in North Carolina. He's steely-eyed, he's always described. He was a poker player and a great trial lawyer, and he went back to his office. The Pentagon had just opened. He just learned his men were executed, and a messenger knocks on the door, and there's a letter, handwritten. He thinks it's another piece of hate mail. Remember, he was getting hate mail, and he had a bodyguard because he was defending the Nazis under orders. And something makes him open it, and it's a handwritten note from the sixth man who had just been executed, whom he defended zealously, brilliantly, and thanking him and saying they got a far better trial than they would ever hope to expect to get in Germany. And they also knew he did it at great personal sacrifice. And never in his life did he get or would he ever get a letter of such heartfelt appreciation. And I think it tells you a lot about Royal.
Oh, that just I got to tell you, when I read that, that made the hair stand on the back of my neck.
Yeah, me too. When I found that letter, I wanted to be sure it was real, because you can't write a movie like that. You know?
No.
They'd say over the top in Hollywood.
Yeah, oh yeah.
Make that scene from the script. But no, it really happened. And then he got three letters from Supreme Court justices, including his nemesis, as you know, Frankfurter.
Oh yeah.
Who was part of a kind of an inside rig deal on the Supreme Court case.
Well, Frankfurter didn't have any mercy on him, that's for certain.
No, he didn't, but he also recognized his brilliance. And I actually believe, as I hint in the book, that it was Frankfurter who told Roosevelt to appoint Royal.
And I think something a lot of people didn't know, and I must admit I didn't know, FDR, earlier on at least in his tenure, was somebody who had campaigned to get rid of the death penalty in America.
Remarkable, yes. In the 30s, he had actually campaigned openly against the death penalty. Even in those days, it thought it had been disproportionately inflicted on the poor, the ignorant, and minorities, blacks. But when it came to protecting his country, he was certainly interested in civil liberties. No question, he was a civil libertarian at heart. But when he had to strike the balance between civil liberties and national defense, he struck the same balance that Lincoln, his role model, had struck. Lincoln rounded up 13,000 northern critics of his war policy. They were judges, lawyers, legislators, and journalists, and locked them up for a couple of years. I'm not defending that, but when you're in the catbird seat and the nation's at stake, sometimes you have to strike a balance that you were certainly not striking at time of peace.
Yeah, I do want to let you know once again we're having trouble with the phone line a little
bit. I apologize.
You're cutting in and out a little bit. Speaking of civil liberties, there's a part in the book talking about that fear shouldn't lead to suppression of civil liberties. Do you think, how real is that right now?
Well, I think that it's very real. I think that the second London bombings and 9/11 put into the forefront of our minds a fear of our lives, for our families and our children. And I think that the Patriot Act being renegotiated right now on the floor of the House, passing pretty heavily, and now going to the Senate and the Joint Committee, I think we have to understand what Senator Feingold has said and others, which is that we must protect our country, but at the same time we're fighting a war on terror for a reason. One of the people that have reviewed my book, Colonel McMaster, says we can't lose sight of the values we're fighting for, otherwise the terrorists will have won. Nobody has a brief for terrorists. I've said about Guantanamo for 3-4 years, guy. I said, find the ones that you think are really bad, charge them. Have a uniform code of military justice, what we call a court-martial, not this jerry-rigged thing the Defense Department rigged up that courts are enjoining left and right. Because, you know, the best kind of justice is speedy justice. That's the only deterrent. Right now, Al-Qaeda network is having no trouble filling its quotas, and we can't fill the quotas for the American Army. And I think there's a reason for that, because I don't think the Al-Qaeda think there's any deterrent for the United States other than maybe getting shot or blowing yourself up. And so what I've said all along is that in striking the balance, okay, you can still preserve the civil liberties of enemy combatants and prisoners of war and honor the Geneva Convention, as Secretary Powell has advocated and John McCain has advocated, and still fight a war on terror.
Well, lest some of our I honestly don't know where you stand politically. I really don't. But lest some of our listeners today think that this is an all left wing program, whatever, I would like to remind everybody that Justice Scalia, of all people,
yes, sir,
rejected any notion that a citizen can be indefinitely imprisoned merely on proof of a reasonable suspicion or some other standard short of a jury finding guilt beyond reasonable doubt. That's Scalia talking, folks.
Right, you know, I find myself in, I say politics and writing books makes for strange bedfellows. William Sapphire, John McCain, Colin Powell, Robert Byrd, Anthony Scalia, and I come out the same place about striking the balance. Scalia's dissent in the Hamdi case last June, where the Supreme Court said the president didn't have the, first of all, the Supreme Court could review the president's actions in locking up a U.S. citizen for 3 years without charges or counsel. That was a very important victory for Americans in the Bill of Rights. But they went on to say that you get some due process. Scalia wrote a very scathing dissent joined by Justice Stevens, so we had Mutt and Jeff, right? The most conservative of the
people.
And what Scalia said was, excuse me, Congress, only Congress can suspend the writ of habeas corpus. Last time I checked, Congress hasn't done that in the war on terror. Therefore, whether your name is Hamdi or Smith or whatever, I don't care, if you're suspected of and arrested for a crime, terror crime, related crime, you must have speedy trial, counsel, jury trial, right to appeal like every other citizen. And he went on to say, he said, look, let's not sweep up the Bill of Rights in the name of war on terror. Because, you know, as I point out in my book, throughout history, presidents have often, like in World War I, Wilson and his attorney general, Palmer, the notorious Palmer Raids, which I'm sure you're familiar in my book, they lost sight of the fact of why they were fighting World War I against totalitarianism. And what was not lost in World War II, in my book, is that one Army colonel said, look, I know my guys have confessed, and I know what's probably going to happen to them in this kangaroo military trial with seven generals, but I'm going to defend them, and I believe that some of these charges are inappropriate. I think the two U.S. citizens are entitled to regular jury trial, and he had the guts to go to Supreme Court Justice Black's house to ask the Supreme Court to take the case. Remember what happened? Black threw him out of his house.
Sure, sure.
Then he went to Justice Roberts, and Roberts talked to the Chief Justice Stone, and the Supreme Court, to their credit, had a hearing. A two-day, nine-hour hearing in 1942, when America was on its back, and the rising sun flag covered the Pacific, and the swastika covered Europe on the map of the world, and they had a two-day argument, one of the greatest arguments in Supreme Court history. I was happy to find the transcript, where the great Attorney General Biddle goes up against his Army colonel in his full-dress uniform. And it was and I talked to the last living person, Lloyd Cutler, the famous lawyer who died 2 months ago, guys. He described that courtroom to me. He was the youngest member of the prosecution team. He was 25. and I could bring it back to life. Now, I clerked in the Supreme Court and saw dozens of arguments, and that's my personal favorite chapter in the book on the argument in the Supreme Court. But this happened at the height of World War II. Why not today? Can we not just give a modicum of due process to these foreign detainees, most of them should be sent home, take the bad ones and prosecute them and convict them, and if death is appropriate, that's what should be done. But I don't think it has anything to do with whether you're Republican or Democrat or liberal or conservative. It's what the Bill of Rights requires, and Anthony Scalia spelled it out in the Hamdi. Go to my website, www.intimeofwar.org, okay, timeofwar.org, and click source documents and read Justice Scalia's dissent in Hamdi, which I summarize, as you know, in my book. Every American should read that dissent.
We're listening to Pierce O'Donnell. We're talking about his book, In Time of War, Hitler's Terrorist Attack in America, and much, much more. You know, Pierce, it does seem to me that one of the hallmarks of a civilized society, and I'm no attorney, certainly far from it, but one of the hallmarks and one of the real pillars of a civilized society is to give the worst kind of criminal a fair trial. That's what makes us civilized and what keeps the fabric of this country together. And the fact that we're not wanting to do that, not wanting to speed this along right now, is to me, I think that's disparaging to the name of the United States of America.
Men and women are dying in Afghanistan and Iraq for the American way, and the American way is fairness and due process and the rule of law. My father was a World War II hero. He survived the invasion of Normandy and went to the and fought the Battle of the Bulge under Patton. When he was fighting in Europe, he was fighting the same battle and for the same values that Colonel Royal was fighting for in the Supreme Court for eight Nazi terrorists. The same is true today. There's a colonel who heads the 3rd Army Regiment in Iraq who's a friend of mine named Colonel McMaster, wrote a bestseller called Dereliction of Duty a few years ago about failure of the military leadership during Vietnam to speak out. And when he writes to me emails every day, he believes in the mission there. Forget what I think about the war in Iraq, okay? I'm talking about, he said, we're fighting to bring a democracy here. But he's the one who also said in my book, but let's not forget that we have to preserve democracy at home, and we cannot give the terrorists an easy victory by stooping to their level.
Well,
Dostoevsky said the measure of a civilization, to measure a civilization, you only need to enter its prisons. Go to Guantanamo.
Most certainly. And, you know, it goes to part of what you were talking about there goes back to, I think it was Ben Franklin who said, those who would trade, those who would trade temporary safety for, to give up a little bit of liberty for temporary safety deserve neither. And I think we're kind of headed that way.
I don't know if you're a lawyer or not, but you're a good student of history, my friend.
Well, I love history.
And the thing about history, I have a whole last chapter in my book, which if you don't read anything, I urge you to read that, is called History Lessons. And we, hopefully after 230 years as a democratic society, we have grown up and we admit our mistakes and we profit from them. What's happening now in the name of America is outrageous. And I want to conquer terrorism. I want to conquer it over there. I want to conquer it here. We're all in favor of ending this threat to our way of life, okay? But at the same token, what life are we preserving? And look, what Bush should have done is convene the great lawyers, the men and women of the Judge Advocate General's Corps, prosecutors, defense lawyers, charge these people if you think they did something wrong, give them their status hearing under the Geneva Convention, charge them if you think it's appropriate. And it would have been over by now, guy.
Why aren't they? Why aren't they doing that?
Sitting around Guantanamo.
Why aren't they doing that?
Well, because I think they're afraid of it. I think the military told them early on, most of the 700 guys you got here in Guantanamo are shopkeepers, 14-year-olds, 100-year-olds, people swept up in the fury of war by one tribe to another tribe for the American bounty. Sounds a little bit like slavery 400 years ago, but that's what happened. There's probably under 100 people of any intelligence value in Guantanamo or anybody who's really a seriously bad dude, okay? Prosecute them. You have a right to do it if you think they committed war crimes. International law upholds it. But for some reason, the Pentagon and the Justice Department temporized. They came up with this Rube Goldberg jury process that Republican judges and Democratic judges, Bush appointee in South Carolina, enjoined it. That the Guantanamo proceedings is unconstitutional in violation of the International Geneva Convention, or the 3rd Geneva Convention. You have to ask somebody else other than me why they did it. But as I conclude in my book, have done a disservice to the dedicated professional men in the military, Judge Advocate General's Corps, to a system that's worked for 50-some years, the Uniform Code of Military Justice. I'll tell you, God, if you've got a criminal problem, you'd rather be charged in the military system than you would in the civilian system. It's a much fairer system.
Oh, sure. Why do you think that they just wanted to cast the Geneva Convention aside?
I think that there's a lot of cowboy attitude. They're called the transformationalists, the interventionists. They don't believe in multilateral treaties. They don't believe in mutuality when it comes to decisions, the rush to go to war in Iraq and to throw the UN aside. Was a catastrophe of epic magnitude, we're to find out in this country. And I just think that they want to go it alone. And we had systems in place, we had institutions that could have dealt with this. And I'll tell you, the people that are most upset are the dedicated men and women legal professionals in our Judge Advocate General's Corps, who could have easily handled the situation with both efficiency, toughness, and fairness.
Do you think they're making a good enough effort to separate the hardcore criminals from the shopkeepers and kids and everybody else?
No, see, they're afraid. They're scared of their shadow. They've got their base, and if they release too many people too quickly, people say, well, why'd you have them at all? But, I mean, Amnesty International, better yet, the International Red Cross, Human Rights Watch, Human Rights First, the United Nations, High Commissioner on Human Rights, have all castigated the United States for how it's handled it. The easiest thing you could have done is what Bush Sr. did. In 1991, they rounded up 1,500 people in the battlefield in Kuwait, okay, in Iraq, and they had prompt, what they call Section 5 hearings under the Third Geneva Convention to determine one of three things. Are you a civilian? Okay, go home. Are you a legitimate soldier? Then you're a prisoner of war. Or are you an enemy combatant, in which case we can hold you and charge you with war crimes? Okay? Like the Nazis disguising themselves as civilians after they entered in military uniforms. And those hearings were done promptly, and most people were released. Okay? The same thing could have been done here.
Wow. It's fascinating to me that this is just a black mark on the United States of America. Now, you know, we've got, and I'll say it, I don't know if you agree or not, but we've got hardcore right-wing redneck America saying, kill them all. Kill every one of them. They're all bad guys. If they're in that prison, just kill them all.
Moron, Michael Savage, Savage Nation.
Oh, yeah.
And I'm one of the lawyers. I volunteered to represent one of those poor guys down there. My American College of Trial Lawyers asked us to do it, and we're doing it. And he said, as soon as we return from meeting our clients in Guantanamo, we should all be arrested and charged with treason. Now, that makes maybe good shock radio or whatever those guys do on those kind of right-wing stations. But it really sullies the memory of the men and women who have died for our country over there, and it certainly besmirches the Bill of Rights. I mean, Scalia, going back to Justice Stanton on Scalia again, whatever you want to say about Justice Scalia, he understands that the writ of habeas corpus applies to both citizens and non-citizens alike, and that if you're charged, if you're arrested on suspicion of a terrorism or a war crime, you are promptly charged, you have counsel, and you have a trial.
Sure.
And it was kind of a simple deal, you know what I mean?
Very simple. Very
now,
simple.
In the drug war, we didn't say, okay, you've been arrested for drug trafficking, and we're going to lock you up for an indefinite, for your lifetime, so the war on drugs is over. Well, why? Just because you substitute the word terror, should there be a different result? And Scalia says, well, there shouldn't be. And by the way, this isn't bleeding heart liberalism and all that kind of stuff. It's the right thing, okay? An objective guy. I consider myself a constitutional scholar and hopefully maybe an amateur historian guy. And you just look at our history, okay? And when America has compromised its values, it has lost its way.
I couldn't agree more. Ladies and gentlemen, Pierce, I want to thank you so much for being on the program tonight. I'd love to talk to you for hours about this.
Well, you know something? You can't beat my rate. I'm free. So
yeah.
If you want me back, pal, I'll come back.
Well, I'd love to because there's a lot of territory in this book. And believe me, ladies and gentlemen, if you're a student of history, if you're mildly interested, if you like to find out what's going on now, this book, you've got to read this book. You've got to read this book. It's just absolutely wonderful and well-written and you know, the style it's written in, it's an easy read, and it's a most interesting read. I am a student of history, and I learned some fascinating things in this book, and you will too. Pierce, thank you so much for being with us this evening.
That's right. If you want to go to our website, it's timeofwar.org, and maybe learn a little bit more. I'll come back anytime you want, my friend.
Very good. Thank you. Ladies and gentlemen, Pierce O'Donnell. Yeah, no kidding. I got this book early on in the week, and I couldn't recommend a book any higher than this one. I'm not finished with it by any stretch of the imagination, but there's some things in there that, imagine that. Six Nazi hardcore Nazi criminals. They got a fair trial. They didn't know when they were going to be executed exactly, and one day, all of a sudden, they came and got them out of their cells, and in a period of about an hour and a half, they electrocuted, put 2,000 volts through six of them, and killed them, and that was their sentence. I'm not complaining about that. That was their sentence, and that's what it was supposed to be. And he's back at his desk, their attorney, American colonel, and gets this note thanking him for giving them a fair trial, and that's a more fair trial than they would have gotten in their own country. Ladies and gentlemen, that points out better than I ever could what this is all about right now. Six hardcore Nazi criminals thanking him for getting a fair trial. Better than they could have gotten in their homeland. That's what this is all about right now. We owe the worst of the people in Guantanamo. I don't care, you can disagree with me. We owe the worst of them a fair trial for our sake. For our sake, we owe the worst of them a fair trial. Well, we'll talk more about it when we come back. We're going to pause for a break at the top of the hour. Yes, the top of the hour already. Holy cow, where does the time go? So you get back here. We've got a lot to talk about, and you're listening to the Guy James Show.
You've been listening to the Guy James Show, America's number one democratic radio talk show, counteracting the melodrama and sarcasm of the radical right. All that's left is the truth. Stay tuned. More of the Guy James Show is on the way. This is the Guy James Show on Wink WNOG.
No more blood for oil, we got our own battles to fight out our own soil. No more psychological warfare to trick us to thinking that we ain't loyal if we don't serve our own country with patronage.
We at the Guy James Show would like to thank the following listeners for their support and welcome them to the growing army of clear-thinking Americans who have contributed to the nation's only listener-supported democratic radio talk show. Heather Wilkes, Mesa, Arizona. Elaine Miller, Newton, Iowa. Virginia Miller, Newton, Iowa. Dr. Irvin Winsboro, Fort Myers, Florida. Valerie Cribbs, Cherry Valley, California. Michael Bradley, Austin, Texas. Steve Brodkin, North Fort Myers, Florida. Mike DeAngelis, San Jose, California. Chris Kern, Hudson, Florida. And Mark Mehef, Reno, Nevada. To join the growing list of those that support the Guy James Show, log on to theguyjamesshow.com and make a contribution. Or send your contribution to The Guy James Show, 12870 Tradeway 4, number 108, Bonita Springs, Florida, 34135.
Welcome back to the BuzzFlash.com GOP Hypocrite of the Week. It's just too hard to fathom such base evil as outing a CIA operative who specialized in tracking weapons of mass destruction. After all, isn't that something we would expect Osama bin Laden to do? But it was Karl Rove, and at least one other White House senior staffer who accomplished what Al-Qaeda could only dream of achieving. It is also possible that Bush approved this betrayal of Homeland Security because Bush retained his own lawyer after Plaingate broke as a story 2 years ago. Yet, Republicans who tried to impeach a president over a sex act dismiss Rove's vile action as nothing more than a tempest in a teapot. That's according to the creepy, sanctimonious hypocrite Orrin Hatch. Ken Melman, chair of the RNC, has been leading an orchestrated campaign to claim that Rove was the victim of a smear job by Democrats. You know, that's standard operating procedure for the Grand Hypocrisy Party. When you're guilty, blame the Democrats for pointing it out. Rove appears appears to be, hypocritically speaking, organizing his own defense. According to the Washington Post, Melman talked to Rove several times in the days after his Flamegate leaking was confirmed. So it's clear our modern-day Benedict Arnold, who has enabled our enemies by rendering Valerie Plame and the front firm she worked for useless in identifying illicit WMD, is still spinning away, a whirling dervish of treachery. Neocon pundit William Crystal thinks Rove's treason is A-OK with him. Instead, Crystal calls Patrick J. Fitzgerald, quote, the problem for the White House, and we have no idea what he knows, unquote. So the investigator that Bush claims he wanted to unravel an act of national betrayal is now the problem for the White House? Why? Because he is trying to find out the truth. You see, the last thing a good Republican leader wants is anyone actually uncovering the truth. Disclosing the truth to a Bushevik is tantamount to, well, treason. Once you stop lying, you're of no use to this White House and the Republican Party. They have no need of an honest person because their reign is built upon a pyramid of deception. Our national security be damned. Until next week, remember our motto at BuzzFlash.com. So many Republican hypocrites. Oh, so little time. Catch up with you soon.
The lie detector is here. Now, your wait is over. This is the Guy James Show. Democratic talk show. You've heard from the radical right. Now all that's left is the truth. Now here's Guy James.
All right. Yes, indeed, we are back. And many, many, many thanks to Pierce O'Donnell for being our guest on the program. My goodness, a great interview with that gentleman. I apologize for a little bit of audio trouble. Wasn't on our end, is on his phone. You know, those California phones out there. That's what now I'll get everybody from California calling in. Appreciate all of our California listeners. We really do. And we appreciate all of you folks out there listening to the program. We really do. Our audience is growing bigger and bigger every week on the Guy James Network here. So glad to have you along with us. And we've got Johnny in here adding a lot of new production quality to the program, and Lila over there directing away, and Erica, she's just, well, I'll tell you, I got to stay on the ball now. I do. I used to be in here just two of us, and now, see, I mentioned California. I just mentioned California, and bang, there's a call coming in from California, and I'm going to get to it in just a moment. I am. But those Californians, of course, it's only, 4:05, 4:06 out in California, so it's before dinner yet right now, and they've still got some time on their hands. I want to ask all my friends on the left an important question. And it's a question that must be asked after this week that we've just been through, and it's an important question that really is troubling me. It is. It's caused me a real little war going on up in my head. The question is, what good will it do to fight this Supreme Court nomination? I know all of my pro-choice friends think we want to fight this to the death. I know, and I understand that. And I understand that, they've been telling, that all of our Democratic leaders have been telling us all along that they're going to pick their battles to fight. And as far as I'm concerned, they haven't fought any yet. the way they ought to be fighting and fought. And none of them. They caved on the nuclear option thing, although they said they didn't. They caved. But think about it. What good will it do to fight this Supreme Court nomination, other than, you know, holding our heads high after it's over with and saying we fought the good fight? There are those on the left who are going to fight hard against this appointment. We know that. They're planning to make the process a down-and-dirty fight to the finish. My question is, from a practical standpoint, why? Why do you want to do that? Why spend all of your ammunition on a battle you know you're going to lose? You know you're going to lose it. What sense does that make? And if you disagree, you call me and let me know. Wouldn't it make more sense to fight a battle you can win? No matter where you stand on this Roberts nomination, you've got to realize that short of a long, drawn-out filibuster, which, by the way, if we do filibuster, is going to be quashed by the Republicans anyway with their threatened nuclear option, short of that, what chance does the left have of winning that battle against the Roberts nomination? I think the odds are slim and none, and the right-wing media machine will make it seem as though we would oppose Mother Teresa anyway if we do that. They're already pumping this guy up to be, you know, God himself. I mean, I've never heard a Supreme Court nominee get more glowing credentials by the Republicans. They've just been saying, oh, this guy walks on water. I think a real fight over this nomination will take the spotlight off the Rove and Libby and Cheney and whomever else involved off the treason case. I believe that the American public hates bold-faced lies and treachery from our leaders, and the Treasongate investigation is beginning to prove that there's definitely more fire than smoke involved here. Somebody high up in the Bush administration is guilty of treason, or even several people may be guilty. And it remains to be seen how many are involved, but it also remains to be seen just how high up the ladder this thing goes. But regardless of how high up it goes, it's beginning to shine the light on these political rats who prefer doing their dirty work in the back alley, doing it in the dark. And even more seriously, we can now see that there's evidence of a conspiracy. There is. The State Department memo that was circulated on Air Force One the day after Wilson's article was obviously read by everyone on that plane, and I wonder, maybe even the pilot saw it, and it's becoming clear that several people are involved in this. And think about that. Think about that for a moment. Some of you that say, oh, this is nothing. A conspiracy among those high up in the administration, maybe even including the vice president and the president himself, a conspiracy to destroy the reputation of a man whose honest opinion they disagreed with, a man who George Bush's father called a hero, a guy that had been a Republican a lot of his life, Joe Wilson, but even more dastardly, a conspiracy to ruin the career of the man's wife and while doing so, helping our enemies around the world who have designs on getting WMDs, because that's what she was involved in, seeking out WMDs in the hands of rogue nations. Maybe the American public doesn't understand or doesn't even care about the appointment of a Supreme Court judge, but I believe they do care. They do care very much about being deceived by a man whom they trusted with the keys to the kingdom. I believe that. I believe even some of Bush's closest allies would absolutely run from him if they found out he or Cheney's involved in this evil deed. So I think it is important to fight the more important battle. You can disagree with me about not fighting the nomination of Roberts because of your passion for the cause of pro-choice, but the fact remains that odds are 100-1 that we can win that battle. So I think it's important to be diligent in pushing the Roe story as much and as far as possible. We can't have people like him and his accomplices doing the kind of dirty work in the name of our government in our name. We cannot have that. If we allow it, that's what we deserve. If we don't seek justice in this case, we become just as guilty as the perpetrator of this crime if we don't seek justice for these people. That's all I want. I want justice, and I want the light of truth to shine on what happened in this matter. If Karl Rove has sunk low enough to do something like this, if Scooter Libby, if Dick Cheney, if Mary Madeline, whoever's involved in it, I want to know who it was, and I want to know the full effects of it, and I want them to admit it. Because, after all, Mr. Bush is hanging on to this guy. That shows you one thing. Make no mistake about this, and I'm assuming this, but I think anybody with anybody with a logical mind knows damn well that George W. Bush knows exactly what happened in this case. You would never, ever, ever convince me that these two guys, knowing each other for 30 years, being palsy-walsy with cute little names for each other, you would never, ever convince me that George W. Bush hasn't asked Karl Rove at one time or another, hey, Karl, what the hell's going on here? No. No. He knows what's going on. He's talked this over with Rove. I think you'd be just plain stupid to think that he hasn't. He knows. And so the spotlight's on George Bush, not just Karl Rove. Because if George W. Bush is the kind of a man who will tolerate this kind of thing in his administration, then he is not worthy of the presidency of the United States. Not by a long shot. Let's talk to Dave in Southern California. Hi, Dave.
I'm up to the other end of the state.
Well, you know, Dave, you know Ron did this to me. Ron put Southern California on the board here. Ron, do you know which end of the state's which here?
That's his first mistake.
San Francisco. Oh, it's his very first?
Yep.
Well, all right. We'll give him a pass on that. So you see, Ron, San Francisco's up here, and L.A. and San Diego are down here. We got he's got it, Dave.
I'm almost up in Oregon, yep.
Oh, yeah.
In any event, I believe myself that we have to fight just about everything this Bush administration does everywhere, because everything is going to be harmful, dangerous to this country, and this appointment is going to be too, along with John Bolton. So much is happening from this administration that's so terribly destructive. I do believe the dots are all connecting. I think it goes back to the days of PNAC when they were planning for their new world order, planning that they would need a new Pearl Harbor. I believe that the Downing Street memo, where they spelled out that they intended to cook the evidence to justify their invasions. We've learned... I'm losing my thought here just a little bit, but the evidence was being cooked there, and that Joe Wilson, he tries to tell the truth. He comes out and says, no, the evidence is faulty. It's being misrepresented. Then the next dot that connects is the White House attacks Joe Wilson. It's an ongoing pattern there, isn't it?
Oh, absolutely. Yeah, kill the messenger. Over and over and over again.
Well, they cannot have an honest person. They cannot have an honest person in that administration. Anybody that's going to say this is the truth is going to be the death of them. You have a thing here on your page that indicates that even Fox News may be taking a second look at the guy.
Well, don't they have to if they're going to maintain any credibility at all?
Yeah. Well, they haven't up until now.
That is if credibility is important to Fox News.
No. That's a low priority.
I never really thought it was one of their priorities, but, you know.
Anyway, I so much appreciate your program, and that was an excellent interview you did with Pierce.
Well, thanks, Dave, and if you get a chance, be sure and take a look at his website and get a hold of that book. You won't be sorry. Thanks for your call.
Thank you.
Good to hear from you. Yeah, where's this going to go? We have Karl Rove on the one side, being Bush's brain, and he's involved in this somewhere. We have Karen Hughes, you know, probably his most trusted advisor, when she wrote her book, which, by the way, was a good book. Karen Hughes, when she wrote her book, said that she told the leakers, whoever they were, she encouraged them to come out and tell the truth. Well, what does she think about this whole mess right now? There are some very, very strange things happening right now. Very strange things happening in this case. This memo thing that was put out as fact this past week. Now we know. You know, before, I think some people had doubts about it. I think anybody that's really into this now knows for sure that there are indictments coming. And, you know, this prosecutor is not a guy that's going to let something slip through his hands. Not only is he looking at trying to find out the legalities and illegalities of leaking, he's also looking into conspiracy and perjury charges right now. Somewhat serious charges, especially a conspiracy charge. That would be Well, that's the one I believe will come along, because if there isn't a conspiracy on this, my name isn't Guy James. Let's go to Juanita in Winter Haven, Florida. Hi, Juanita.
Hello, how are you today?
Very good, thank you.
You're sounding good.
Well,
I have an idea about the Supreme Court justices, what the Democrats could do if they only would. Let the people, they have until October, right?
That's right.
Okay. Let all of us people let our senators know what we want. And then let them vote what we want. And not be talking about it. Just let them vote. I think that will work on a lot of different things. It's just too much talk. And then when they come to the vote, then so many of them give in and vote for what Bush wants.
Oh, yeah, a lot of them are going to talk tough about this guy.
And
a lot of them will talk tough about this guy, and they'll come along and vote for him. They will.
Right, right. And another thing I would like to know is I would like to ask a question about the Valerie Plame, something that you hear discussed a lot, but I don't know what the point is. They say that his wife is the one that sent him. Are they saying that she decided to send him without consulting someone?
They would like everybody to believe that.
I mean, that doesn't make sense.
That's an out-and-out lie. I mean, it's just an out-and-out lie. It never happened. The CIA came along, and the Cheney people came along and said that they wanted to send somebody over there, and told the CIA that, and the CIA approached Wilson, and they obviously they asked his wife, what about it? Do you think he'd be available for this? But they did not okay him. I mean, she did not okay. She didn't have the power or the authority to do that.
That's what I was thinking. And see, I hadn't thought about it until this last week. I've heard them say it over and over again, but I thought, well, how can they say she could just say, oh, well, you know, you need to go over there and do something about it, you know, without any authority at all. And the guy is an expert on that part of the country. I mean, the part of the world.
Oh, yeah. It's a good point. Absolutely a good point.
And I wonder, you know, is Karen Hughes Bush's twin sister?
Well, you have to wonder sometimes. If
are they the one and the same? You know, maybe, you know, they say that he doesn't talk his cowboy talk in private, or didn't used to.
Well,
maybe she's really the way he really sounds, you know, when he's in drag or else in his true colors. I don't know.
Well, I think all of Texas knows that he's not a real cowboy. I think everybody in Texas knows that he's a wannabe cowboy.
Yeah.
He's a wannabe cowboy, from what I understand, that doesn't know how to ride a horse.
I mean, she may be a good rider, you know, but I don't trust the things she says, you know.
Yeah.
Too.
No, I don't either, but I did find it interesting.
I know. Well, you have to give the devil his due.
That's right. That's right.
Yeah.
Thanks for calling, Juanita.
Okay.
Good to
bye
hear
bye.
From you.
You too. Bye-bye.
Let's go up to good Democratic territory. Let's go up to Melford, Massachusetts, and talk to Alice. Hi, Alice.
Hi, Guy.
Nice to have you with us today. I hear you want to talk about the Supreme Court nomination.
Yes. It's basically the Supreme Court in general.
Mm-hmm.
With the loss of Sandra Day O'Connor, there's going to be no woman representation. And I don't know, everything else is supposed to be 50% women, 50% men. And I don't see how men can understand women's issues necessarily.
Well, of course, we still got Ruth Bader Ginsburg on there, but she'll be an 8-1 minority on the Supreme Court, and you're right. I agree with you. They've of course used the defense for that they wanted the best qualified person, not the best qualified woman. And you know what that says to me? That they just believed that 99% of the women in the country weren't as well qualified as the men. That's what it was. A slap in the face to the women, to me.
To me, it looks like an old boys' network.
Well, it is. There's no doubt about it. I absolutely believe that it is. I agree with you.
Yeah, that's really what I agree with you. Probably we'll lose on the Roberts thing, but something needs to be done about changing the representation of women, because it seems to me that we'll go back to women almost being slaves. They have no say.
Well, you better believe if the fundamentalist Christians that drive this administration, the ones with the power behind this administration, had their way, you would be walking two steps behind your man, and you would keep your mouth shut, and you would dress the way they wanted you to, and you would, you know, be seen and not heard. That is what would happen in this Bush administration if the Christian fundamentalists had, like Falwell and Robertson, had their way.
Right.
And we need to guard against that.
And, of course, you know, I'm not that type.
Yeah. Well, most Christians aren't that way. But these people have usurped the power. And they know that they put Bush in office. And Bush knows they put Bush in office. And the Republicans are dependent on those votes now. And they're certainly acting as lapdogs to the Falwells and the Robertsons and the James Dobbins. And I don't think there's any question about that. Alice, I thank you for your call.
Okay.
Alice makes a lot of sense. I'm puzzled. I'm puzzled as to why we've gotten no calls. I put out a little challenge earlier for our right-wing friends to give us a call if they could prove to me one lie that Joe Wilson has told about this. We've all heard Melman and Orrin Hatch and, my God, anybody I can think of, even the likes of John McCain, getting on TV and saying that Joe Wilson is a liar. And I've researched everything Joe Wilson said. I've gone back and checked out the quotes they've attributed to him. And, folks, there's no evidence Joe Wilson has lied about anything here. But that wonderful right-wing spin machine has been in high gear ever since this came out. And they have smeared Joe Wilson as they smear every... Richard Clark? And look at the first Secretary of the Treasury. Now, I can't think of his name under Bush. His name escapes me at the minute. But look what happened when he left and said that the administration was, you know, not getting the job done. They smeared him. They smeared Clark. They smeared everybody. And like I said, I've said many times, they do eat their own. And they are eating their own. And I heard Paul Begala earlier this week. He said the first... of the Republican talking points is now no longer operative. The first talking point was, there's no crime here. She wasn't undercover. That wasn't secret. Well, guess what? Now we know it was secret. Now we know that State Department memo said it was secret. So they keep backpedaling. They keep changing the goalposts. They keep running from this issue. And even John McCain. You know, I started to talk about John McCain a little earlier. McCain is thought to be as honest as they come. He really is, and he sometimes doesn't tote the party line. And I always kind of admired him for that. He's kind of an independent thinker. And let's face it, the extreme right hates John McCain. But he even jumped all over President Bush for that episode down in South Carolina during the 2000 primary, where they just did such dirty work against John McCain. And like somebody said on Hardball, he caved in like a cheap suit on the issue of Rovegate. He stuck to that Ken Melman defense. And just looking at some quotes here, Matthews asked the proper question in trying to give him a basic right or wrong opinion. Chris Matthews said, and I quote, "I want to know what," and this is to John McCain, "I want to know what your ethical standard would be here if it is shown that somebody in the White House, the vice president's staff, or somebody on the president's staff, whoever they are, intentionally leaked an undercover agent's identity as a way of either just pushing them back or punishing them. Whatever the motive, do you think the standard should be, did they break a criminal act or not?" McCain said, "I don't know, because it depends on, look, I can't be the president of the United States. I trust the president. I believe that he'll do the right thing. Now, you know, you know that John McCain doesn't trust George Bush any farther than he can throw him. You know that. If you're a hardcore Republican, you know that. We Democrats know that. And if you're a hardcore Republican, you know there is no love lost between those two men." And then he says, "I believe that he'll do the right thing." No, he doesn't. George Bush has never done the right thing, especially where John McCain's concerned. So why would he say that? And so anyway, John McCain goes on to say, "And right now the status of the situation is that Karl Rove still publicly denies that he did leak
this name, okay? And I believe he is the presumption of innocence until proven guilty. And again, as we said earlier in our conversation, he was trying to refute allegations that Ambassador Wilson made that turn out not to be true. That is a lie. The allegations that Ambassador Wilson turned out to be absolutely true. And then McCain goes on to say, and he knew they were not true. Well, I'm sorry, John McCain, that's not the truth. And then he says, well, I'm talking about Karl Rove knew they were not true. You know, he didn't answer the question that Matthews put to him. Matthews wasn't asking about the president or the current status of the case. He asked him for an opinion. And McCain, what did he do? Instead of giving an opinion, he brought it back to Joe Wilson. It was an easy question. But McCain just flip-flopped around, didn't know what else to say. He was a fish out of water and couldn't answer the question, as none of them have been able to so far. Absolutely. I got a great letter from one of our regular listeners this week, and I'm going to take just a moment to let you know about it. If I have time before the bottom of the hour here, I got about a minute and a half or so. This is from Julio that often calls the program. Why is the President of the United States of America acting like a criminal? Why won't he answer questions? What does he have to hide? What can he tell a special prosecutor that he cannot tell the American people? Oh, I like that. Why aren't these questions being asked to our Commander-in-Chief? The media has gotten credit the last week for stiffening up on Bush and not being such lapdogs, but they're still not asking the tough questions. If this is an ongoing investigation and the judge told people not to talk, then why are Matt Cooper and Joe Wilson going around telling everybody what happened? It's because they're allowed to, that's why. Is Bush a part of the investigation? Is he afraid to answer any questions because he's afraid of incriminating himself and his administration any more than it has? Why hasn't this been asked of him? If you didn't do anything wrong, you have nothing to hide, right? That is what we're told as justification for the Patriot Act. So, yes, for sure. So it is good if it's good enough for us, but the president has a man who is involved in an investigation that could lead to treason charges sitting two doors down from his office. And keep in mind that these are the same people who got so excited about Clinton getting a you all know what Clinton got in the White House, but that's just more hypocrisy. Why else hold a press conference on prime TV to announce the Supreme Court justice? Every other president has done it in a nonchalant way, but I guess they have to, because otherwise he would not be that good old boy you would still like to have over for your barbecue. And I'll leave you with this. I will stand by the fact that this country is not behind this war. And he goes on to talk quite a bit about this going on. Julio, I do thank you for that, and you make a lot of sense in that, as you always do. Do want you to know you're listening to the Guy James Show. We're going to pause for a break right now. We're going to have Republican Love a little later on. You'll want to hear that. We'll be right back.
This is the Guy James Show. James Show would like to thank the following listeners for their support and welcome them to the growing army of clear-thinking Americans who have contributed to the nation's only listener-supported Democratic radio talk show. Heather Wilkes, Mesa, Arizona. Elaine Miller, Newton, Iowa. Virginia Miller, Newton, Iowa. Dr. Irvin Winsboro, Fort Myers, Florida. Valerie Cribbs, Cherry Valley, California. Michael Bradley, Austin, Texas. Steve Brodkin, North Fort Myers, Florida. Ben and Suzanne Williams, Myrtle Beach, South Carolina. Chris Kern, Hudson, Florida. And Mark Meehan, Reno, Nevada. To join the growing list of those that support the Guy James Show, log on to theguyjamesshow.com and make a contribution. Or send your contribution to The Guy James Show, 12870 Tradeway 4, number 108, Bonita Springs, Florida, 34135.
Do you believe the right is afraid, you'll find out. You're on The Guy James Show.
We at The Guy James Show would like to thank the following listeners for their support and welcome them to the growing army of clear-thinking Americans who have contributed to the nation's only listener-supported Democratic radio talk show. Ann Ross, New York, New York. Luciano Ursetti, Cape Coral, Florida. Alice Knowlton, Milford, Massachusetts. Dave Goggin, Eureka, California. Annette Benner, Marysville, Washington. Joe and Nancy Vogel, St. Paul, Minnesota. Juan Puerto, Fort Myers, Florida. Sarah Kay, Santa Fe, New Mexico. And Marcia Johns, Merritt Island, Florida. To join the growing list of those that support The Guy James Show, log on to theguyjamesshow.com and make a contribution. Or send your contribution to The Guy James Show, 12870 Tradeway 4, number 108, Bonita Springs, Florida, 34135.
Oh, yeah, Guy James back with you here on the Democratic Radio Network. Glad to have you along with us this evening. How many of you heard this, what shall I call him? Hal Lindsey. He was discussing Senator Richard Durbin's recent controversial remarks and Newsweek's retraction of a story about the abuse of a Koran by U.S. military personnel. Trinity Broadcast Network, TBN, television host Hal Lindsey called liberals some of our worst enemies on the July 12th episode of his international intelligence briefing on TBN. Johnny, what did Mr. Lindsey say?
In a curious way, guys like Durbin and the anti-Americans at Newsweek have done us a favor. They've left little doubt that the leftist agenda is not just real, it is downright dangerous. It was something of a wake-up call to the rest of us that some of our worst enemies are to be found among our own people.
I hope that guy takes a hike. The rest of us, meaning all the good people and all the liberal people, are all the bad people. Because we're here at TBN, you see, we're Christians and you're not, you see. And we're carrying the flag for good Christians, all, and we're going to beat those dirty Muslims. That's what we're going to do. That's what he's saying. We're the rest of us, the good people, and you, the bad people. Take a hike, Lindsey. You stinking... Well, never mind. The guy just makes my blood boil. Makes my blood boil when he gets on there and talks like that. But that's what you get. That's what you get. They've got that on over 5,000 stations. People listening to that on 5,000 stations around the world. They hear that kind of propaganda and go, oh, yes, yes, praise the Lord. Listen to Hal Lindsey. That's what he said. It must be true. Sure, Hal. Like to get Hal as a guest on this program. Certainly would. Love to get Carl as a guest on Hal Lindsey on this program. Right now, we're going to go to John in Cape Coral. Hi, John.
Well, good evening.
Good evening.
You know, I don't think, and I may be wrong, I don't think they're going to get Mr. Rove. And let me tell you why I don't think so. I don't think it matters what he's done. I think he is, Mr. Bush would be lost without him. I don't think your administration could function without him. I think he's the one probably who's the one behind the puppets, pulling the strings and telling Bush what to say. I don't think Bush could stand up without him. So they'll cover for him in any way they can.
Huh? Yeah, they're going to cover for him.
And I don't think the facts matter. And I'm not disagreeing with you on the facts or any of the other talk show hosts who've gone after it.
Now, John, nobody ever said that the facts matter to this administration.
Yeah, well, I think that's really the issue.
Facts are just a nuisance to them.
Exactly. You know, I think we got to look at the seriousness of what's going on. They need this man. He's a... You know, integral to this administration, and it doesn't matter. I mean, they'll cover for him in any way they can and do whatever they can because they need him there. and he's absolutely vital. He's like the man who, you know, is right now the fellow who is answering your telephones. Without him, you'd have a problem running your show. It wouldn't function the right way. You need him, whether you make like him or not. You need him.
Oh, John, now we got to give him a raise.
I'm sorry.
Look what you've done.
I'm sorry. I apologize.
He's sitting over there grinning from ear to ear.
Well, maybe he'll take my call next time. I don't know. But seriously, you know, everybody's looking at this, and, you know, they got to look. They're going to do whatever they can for this man because... listening to Bush, when he gets up and talks on his own, he makes a fool of himself. You've put him on that way so many times. We've seen him on TV. He needs somebody there who's going to make it work. And Rove is one of these people. I think Cheney may be the other one who's calling the signals. I think Bush just stands up there and looks like he's president. They make him feel good that he's president. And they prop him up with what to say. But I don't think the man could make it on his own.
No, I don't either. They obviously found him. Rove decided a long time that here's that patsy we've been looking for. Here's that puppet we can stand up our yes man for us. We'll put him in, and he was electable, kind of. And they put him up in front of the public, and it's worked for him.
And I don't think he's making any of the real decisions.
No, not at all.
And I think that's the issue that we have to look at. And unless it gets to a point, you know, like with Nixon, that it becomes so bad, this man will stay. And it's as simple as that. And I think that you have to look at the hard realities of the situation. And unfortunately, Rove will stay, not because he's right, not because he's good, not because he's honest, but because they need him to prop up what they've got for this power structure that's in there today.
I think they're prepared to go to the wall for him. I really do.
And the other thing that we have to look at is that, as I said before, you know, this with the situation in England, a second set of bombings. This morning in, was this morning or last night probably in Egypt, whenever that took place because of the time difference, I'm not quite sure. I heard it this morning. But the situation in Egypt, the situation with the terrorism is getting worse. Obviously, the whole plan they had of Iraq to avert terrorism and the war on, you know, this originally, the war in Iraq was supposed to be the war on terrorism. Am I correct?
Yeah.
Or am I wrong?
That's how they build it.
All right, that's how they build it. And I think, you know, the American people have to look at it, and your right-wing callers, when you get some of these right-wing callers, ask them, do me a favor and ask them a question. Has this war really worked? Do you feel safer? Do you think what has happened in London and in Egypt will not happen here? Have we made ourselves any safer? Would you be happy riding the New York subway or the San Francisco BART or the Washington Metro? Do you think it could happen anywhere in this country? Do you think we have really made ourselves safer?
Not in the least.
And if we haven't done that, then what have we accomplished? What has Bush accomplished?
He's accomplished nothing. I keep asking people to come in and, you know, call in our right-wing friends and tell us the accomplishments of this man, and they never do.
I mean, that becomes the real issue. I think we're lost in the periphery of what did Wilson do, you know, lies about Wilson. They love to get us on it, but let's look at the basic issue. I think we're lost in that. That's not the important thing. The question is, are all these billions of dollars we've spent, the over 760 American lives lost, by the way, I don't know how many more in terms of wounded, because we never get that figure. Has it all been worthwhile? Have we accomplished our goal? Have we made this country safer? And that's my question. And if you can prove to me, Guy, or anybody out there, that I should feel safer traveling, safer in America's cities, in America's heartland, that we really have averted this war on terrorism, that we're dealing with it in a way that's effective, then I would say to you, fine. But until then, I don't feel any safer, and maybe I'm wrong.
Well,
I'd like somebody to show me.
I'm with you on that. I don't feel a bit safer. We'll see how the rest of our callers think. Thank you, John.
And thank you, sir.
Thank you. Good to hear from you. Do we feel safer? I'm taking a poll here in the studio. Johnny, do you feel safer?
I'm putting him on the spot. Johnny, let me ask you something. Would you go to New York City? Would you get on the subway? And you see, some guys 17 through 22 years old, maybe their skin's just a little darker than mine. They get on there, and they've got some backpacks on and stuff. Let me tell you, let me ask you, John, would you start to sweat or not? Come on, John.
Ask them what school they go to.
Uh-huh. I don't feel safer. I don't feel a bit safer. Not that I sit around here in Fort Myers, Florida, and worry about that. I do not. But I think there are people all over this country that do worry about it, and rightly so. We're seeing what's happened in London now. It's a disaster. It's an absolute disaster. Terrorism. I don't know when people are going to start to understand what terrorism, actual terrorism, is. It's not to kill everybody. It's not to it's to instill fear. And you think that isn't working? Absolutely it's working. And why are they instilling fear in the Brits right now? You know why. You know why. Because we're in their land, and they want us out. That's what they've wanted all along. Easterners or Westerners to get the hell out of their country. That's what they would like. They'd like to be left alone. I'm not saying everything they do, you know, God knows these terrorists are horrible people. They are. But, you know, again, armies aren't going to solve this. Armies and rockets and mortars and all, it's not going to solve this. It's not. We've got to address the problem sooner or later. Let's go to John in Fort Myers. Hi, John.
Well, hi, how are you?
Good.
I'm sitting here and I'm wondering why, my nation is great. I think this is a great country. But why do people that are in our government and the elected representatives here think that a country that's 200 plus years old, as far as government goes, has any business telling governments in other countries that are 2,000 years old how to govern themselves?
We don't.
We're just novices. We're new at this.
Absolutely right.
I had a garage sale today, and I always enjoy garage sales because I sell a lot of stuff, and that's my goal. I don't want to get in talking in politics or anything else, but this has happened at least three or four of my garage sales. I'll be talking to a customer. I may point out, well, this is, you know, one of the last things made in America. Or we talked about the heat today. One lady said, don't you need a permit for this sale? Because I told her I just thought about this last night when my neighbor was going to have a sale. I figured I'd put some stuff out. She says, well, your city still requires a license, doesn't it? I said, yes, it does, but I'm going under the wire now. And I said, besides that, I carry a copy of the Constitution with me, and it's unconstitutional for me to have to get a license. But of course, I don't have money to fight that in the Supreme Court. But what comes back from these people was a lot of remarks about this administration. They either didn't like the administration, they didn't like the people in the administration, they just plain flat out didn't like George Bush. And out of, you know, I may have talked to 10 people, politics today, out of maybe 100 or 200 that came to my yard sale. But the last three to five sales I've had have been like this one. You mentioned just something that has nothing to do with anything, just like the heat. And the one lady said, well, I believe in global warming. And she says, this president isn't doing anything about it.
Did you see Now last night?
Yes, I did, sir.
Unbelievable program last night. Let me just tell some folks here quickly on Now last night. I was shocked. I was just shocked. They interviewed a bunch of people that work, scientists and people that work for the Park Service and people that know about environmental issues.
They have expertise.
Yes, and people that worked in the Bush administration and they gave their professional opinion and their scientific opinion and findings on what would happen if the land was overgrazed in our public park and how it should be preserved. And the White House scrubbed everything they said.
The president has hired these people on from different industries that go ahead and change what these people have written down to say the opposite of their findings. And these people he's hired to do this have no expertise at all in any of these fields that they're editing these reports. Now, if people want to see that Now program, it does re-air tomorrow on public broadcasting at 11 o'clock. And it's a half-hour show. And it's an eye-opener. And of course, these people coming today and talking to me the way they did, I thought, well, these guys in Washington aren't fooling anybody. Americans see through this. The problem is we have Limbaugh and Hannity and all these other people that if you call in to their show and try to say, hey, look, you're wrong, they cut you off. They keep doing this propaganda line the administration wants. I don't listen to them. I know a lot of people don't listen to them, and occasionally I might hear them, and it's just the same old record over and over again. But the one impresses me is Limbaugh. He criticizes this president, and these people that support him don't realize he's criticizing this president. So he's playing both sides of the street.
Oh, sure.
And what he does, he'll say, well, the liberals are going to say this about Bush, and the liberals are going to say that about Bush. And he also did it about the Pope, because I talked to one fellow. I said, he was knocking your president, knocking your Pope. And the guy says, no, he was telling what the liberals are going to say. And I said, you dummy, he doesn't have to tell anybody what liberals are going to say. He doesn't know what liberals are going to say. He's saying what he thinks of this administration. So he's playing both sides of the street.
Oh, yeah, he does.
So there you go. I sure thank you for a wonderful program and letting me air the views of people that came to my garage sale today. They're just not being fooled by this.
Well, thank you, John.
Thank you, sir.
Yeah, there's that Now program last night. I sat there and, I've known about some of this, but my jaw dropped. It was how this administration is squelching any report from any of their own people who say anything that doesn't agree with their ridiculous environmental stance. You know, and of course, that is the Bush way. Ignore science. Folks, I don't have to tell you, those of you that can think, I don't have to tell you that there's irrefutable evidence of global warming. I don't have to tell you that. I don't have to tell a seventh grade science student. Don't have to tell them that there is global warming. But the Bush people say there isn't any global warming. I don't know. Well, whatever it is, you know, the thing that drives me crazy about this people is how in the world have they managed to be on the wrong side of everything. Everything. They've been on the wrong side of it. I sit and think about that, and I go down through all the issues and policies and procedures that have happened since this Bush got into office. And I think, my God, how could a president and his administration be on the wrong side of every issue that's come up? You know, some of our Democratic leaders have been wrong on lots of issues. You know, some of them, what's his name? Joe Biden from Delaware, been on about half of the wrong issues half the time. But how can a guy, and he's a Democrat, how could a president be wrong on everything he does? I don't get it. And, you know, his poll numbers are plummeting. He knows that. I don't know. I don't know. I really don't. I'm confused. Mike in San Jose. Hi, Mike.
Hey, Guy. How you doing? Bush Eats Beef from Democratic Under.
Hey, good to hear from you, my friend.
Hey, first of all, give Ron a raise, man. Come on.
Well, Ron, they're voting for you, Ron.
Yeah, I mean, anybody on Democratic Underground who agrees, just post it in Guy's thread. He can tally them up.
Oh, man.
Anyway, listen, the reason I'm calling this, Larry Johnson, the ex-CIA agent that spoke out about the danger of the Bush and Rove loyalty.
Oh, yeah.
The reason I called you guys, the thing I want to point out, and I posted the link to this in your thread, and I told people this is what I was calling you about. Larry Johnson is a registered Republican who voted for Bush in 2000. So this garbage about this being a Democratic issue and the Dems are on a witch hunt for Rove and Rove deserves a medal, this is a Republican. This is a guy who voted for Bush going, this stinks.
Oh, yeah. And, you know, the damning things that he said about this administration and the way that, you know, I think the big thing about his radio address was, I think he said, we must put to bed the lie that she was not undercover. That's number one. I mean, he went on to destroy their argument that she, I mean, here's a guy on the inside that knows. I mean, he didn't have to guess about it. He didn't get this secondhand. He got this right there beside her. It's fascinating.
Yeah, well, the other thing, too, that equally important to that is what is the number one thing that Bush and Cheney sell? They sell fear, and they sell the fact that they are, quote, protecting us. And what did Johnson say? Instead of a president concerned first and foremost with protecting this country and the intelligence officers who serve it, we are confronted with a president who is willing to sit by while political operatives savage the reputations of good Americans like Valerie and Joe Wilson. That's coming from a Republican who voted for Junior.
Absolutely. And he also said, and I'll quote him some more, we deserve people who work in the White House who are committed to protecting classified information, telling the truth to the American people, and living by example the idea that a country at war with Islamic extremists cannot focus its efforts on attacking other American citizens who simply try to tell the truth.
Yeah, because that's the other thing Bush wants you to do, is to be afraid of telling the truth.
Oh, sure.
It's not going to work.
No. No.
Anyway, listen, have a great weekend, Guy. Great talking to you.
Hey, thanks for calling, and thanks for bringing that up. It's an important issue. Thank you, Guy.
Bye.
Oh, yeah. Anybody that heard this Democratic radio address today, they turned it over to ex-CIA official Larry Johnson, who went through CIA training with Valerie Plame, knows exactly what her classification was, when it started, what it was, knows all about it. And he knows damn well that these people had a smear campaign going on to try and discredit Joe Wilson. He knows the truth. And he said it today. And there's no way to refute what he said. No way. Let's go to John in Naples. Hi, John.
Guy, I just wanted to point out that, like, we're in this war on terror, supposedly on a war on terror, and here we have the British police coming out and admitting, which they pumped five shots into a perfectly innocent Brazilian tourist.
Oh, yeah.
And,
is that what he was, a Brazilian tourist?
He was from Brazil. You know, they didn't come out and say it, but he probably was a case. He didn't even know they were identified. They were plainclothes. He probably didn't even have a clue what they were saying.
You know, John, that's exactly what I told somebody earlier today. They said about chasing him down. I said, hey, he might be a foreigner that didn't maybe speak the language necessarily, that they were undercover, and they started chasing him, and he started running. And
right. I think it came out.
Oh, man.
They didn't say that yet in the news. Of course, they're covering up everything they can. But, you know, England used to be a place where the bobbies or the cops, whatever you want to call them, never even carried guns.
Right, right.
Now we got them acting like George Bush, shoot them down.
Yeah, just ran down back
in the night. Alive, we'll ask them after they die what they did.
I heard the story was an eyewitness. I heard an eyewitness say that four of them chased him down, threw him to the ground, and the fifth one came with the gun and put five slugs into his head.
Yeah, well, that's good police work.
Yeah, well.
You know, who's winning the war on terrorism now?
Sure, sure. And don't,
I mean,
don't anybody tell me that the British got a stiff upper lip and aren't worried about this. They're worried. They're real worried.
I'm sure there's going to be a big uproar over there. In fact, it should be the end of Tony Blair, I hope.
Absolutely.
But
they're not any safer.
You know, it's about time we face the facts. We're not protecting anybody with this war in Iraq. All we're doing is antagonizing people wherever. We're causing a bigger problem.
You're putting the old stick in the beehive, and that's what we've done, and we've got it stirred up, and, boy.
And they keep talking about, Bush saying they're jealous of our freedom. Well, our freedom's gone.
That's ridiculous.
He's taking our freedom away.
If they wanted to attack people...
They just renewed the Patriot Act,
Yeah, if they wanted to attack people who were truly free and had a big democracy, why don't they attack Finland and the Norwegian countries? They need to, Norway and Sweden and Finland, they need to attack them if they want to attack people that are free and have a democracy. And I haven't noticed any bombings up there yet. If it's freedom and democracy they want to destroy, come on. Hey, John, thanks for your call.
Okay, thank you.
Good
guys.
To hear from you.
Bye-bye.
I'm so sick of hearing that. I am so sick of hearing that they hate us for our freedom. Oh, please. You know, when you say a thing like that, you're appealing to the least intelligent of us. You're appealing to monkeys. when you say something that stupid, that they hate us for our freedom. They do not hate us for our freedom. A lot of them don't even understand what our freedom is about. And first of all, we're trying to impose our democracy and our type of living on them, and they don't want that. They definitely don't want it. So they hate us for our freedom. Oh, God, George, please don't say that anymore. Please. It makes you look so foolish. You are listening to The Guy James Show on Wink WNOG, 1240 and 1270 AM, Fort Myers, Naples, Florida. And we're going to be back right after the top of the hour with a whole lot more of The Guy James Show.
You've been listening to The Guy James Show, America's number one democratic radio talk show, counteracting the melodrama and sarcasm of the radical right. All that's left is the truth. Stay tuned. More of The Guy James Show is on the way. This is The Guy James Show on Wink WNOG.
The Guy James Show would like to thank the following listeners for their support and welcome them to the growing army of clear-thinking Americans who have contributed to the nation's only listener-supported democratic radio talk show. Ann Ross, New York, New York. Luciano Rossetti, Cape Coral, Florida. Alice Knowlton, Milford, Massachusetts. Dave Goggin, Eureka, California. Annette Benner, Marysville, Washington. Joe and Nancy Vogel, St. Paul, Minnesota. Juan Puerto, Fort Myers, Florida. Sarah Kay, Santa Fe, New Mexico. And Marcia Johns, Merritt Island, Florida. To join the growing list of those that support The Guy James Show, log on to theguyjamesshow.com and make a contribution. Or send your contribution to The Guy James Show, 12870 Tradeway 4, number 108, Bonita Springs, Florida, 34135.
This is a very sensitive subject. Not good. It's bad. Yeah. Mm-hmm. From the moment I heard Barbara say I had a son, I knew that I'd be safe because I'd never be alone. We GOPers shouldn't speak a lot about our feelings. Both hurt and pain don't make us too appealing. I'd hope Junior would look up to me, run the business of the family. Have an evil empire just like his dear old dad. Get him out of Vietnam, that doesn't look too bad. Junior should act like he's a good guy. Finish up my war and cover up his lies. Be evil and show no feelings to. Listen to Dick Cheney, who'll tell him what to do. Junior's in jeopardy. Karl Rove, see? Cut him off. Treat him unfairly. Nothing else matters. Oh, siree. Nothing else but the legacy.
George, what are you doing? Are you, what are you doing, George?
Sorry there, Dick. Just,
What, George, what are you doing?
Taking my son a little something. When he'll get to see it, hopefully he'll get a chance to see it. Know what you're all about. You and I. True that, true that.
The Guy James Show would like to thank the following listeners for their support and welcome them to the growing army of clear-thinking Americans who have contributed to the nation's only listener-supported democratic radio talk show. Heather Wilkes, Mesa, Arizona. Elaine Miller, Newton, Iowa. Virginia Miller, Newton, Iowa. Dr. Irvin Winsboro, Fort Myers, Florida. Valerie Cribbs, Cherry Valley, California. Michael Bradley, Austin, Texas. Steve Brodkin, North Fort Myers, Florida. Ben and Suzanne Williams, Myrtle Beach, South Carolina. Chris Kern, Hudson, Florida. And Mark Meehan, Reno, Nevada. To join the growing list of those that support The Guy James Show, log on to theguyjamesshow.com and make a contribution. Or send your contribution to The Guy James Show, 12870 Tradeway 4, number 108, Bonita Springs, Florida, 34135.
Southwest Florida, your official lie detector is here. Now, your wait is over. This is the Guy James Show. Democratic talk show. You've heard from the radical right. Now all that's left is the truth. Now here's Guy James.
This is a very sensitive subject. Not good. From the moment I heard Barbara say I had a son, I knew that I'd be safe because I'd never be alone. We GOPers shouldn't speak a lot about our feelings. Those hurt and pain don't make us too appealing. I'd hope Junior would look up to me, run the business of the family. Have an evil empire just like his dear old dad. Get him out of Vietnam, it doesn't look too bad. Junior should act like he's a good guy. Finish up my war and cover up his lies. Be evil and show no feelings too. Listen to Dick Cheney, who'll tell him what to do. Junior's in jeopardy. Carl Rove, see? Cut him off. Treat him unfairly. Nothing else matters. Oh, siree. Nothing else but the legacy.
George, what are you doing? Are you, what are you doing, George?
Sorry there, Dick. Just,
what, George, what are you doing?
Singing my son a little something. Well, yeah, he'll get to see it. Hopefully he'll get a chance to see it. Know what you're all about. You and I.
True that, true that. Just the two.
Right, we're back. It's tell me we don't have some high-profile people appear on this show. Real high-profile people. Yeah, you're listening to the Guy James Show, and it's so good to have you along with us on this Saturday evening. What is it, about 8:07 here on the Eastern Time. Awfully glad to have you with us. You know, I've made a couple of people mad. I have. Some of my good friends on Democratic Underground and a couple other websites are angry with me for saying that I wouldn't make the fight against Roberts our primary fight. Let me explain myself. And I understand what you're saying. I most certainly do, being a good Democrat and a liberal. I understand what you're saying. I don't want to say that we shouldn't fight the Roberts nomination. I don't want to say that we shouldn't fight it. Yes, let's do. Let's fight. Let's put up a good fight. Let's make sure this guy is asked every question in the world that needs to be asked of him. Let's do that. Let's get all of his opinions out in the open. We have every right to do so, and we should do so, and let's find out where he stands on important issues. But when it becomes evident that we cannot win the fight, then it's time to retreat, take our ammunition, and wait for another day. But I say fight, absolutely. Absolutely, we fight this nomination of his because we can't let... We know by now. We absolutely know by now that we cannot believe or trust anything that comes from George Bush, so we can't necessarily trust this nomination either. And I don't know where he's going to vote on Roe v. Wade. I still say, and I have maintained for a long time, that they will never, ever overturn Roe v. Wade because they've used that as a club to beat Democrats over the head with for the last how many years? 30 years. And I don't think they want that to go anywhere. I could be wrong. Now, the fundies, they want to overturn it, but I don't think the Republican Party wants to overturn it. That's just how I feel. And I heard from somebody else, and I wanted to thank Cat Shrink on Democratic Underground saying there's more evidence for global warming than there was for WMDs. Well, you said a mouthful there.
a lot more evidence for global warming than there was for WMDs. And I got tired of some of my right-wing friends saying, oh, you people, you just, oh, you always say just all these bad things. Things are bad. I know. The far right's always telling me that that we're the party of doom and gloom right now. But if you don't realize that things are as bad as they've ever been in this country, then you had your head in the sand. You have. Open your eyes. The economy's limping along. Definitely not providing the kind of jobs or the numbers that Americans need to make a living, so they're working two and three jobs to get by, and their families are suffering because of it. Family life is definitely suffering. Gasoline is about, here in Florida, about $2.35 a gallon, with no end in sight for the price of that. Decent housing is going sky high. While wages are certainly not keeping up with the escalation of real estate values, try and be a young couple around here where I live and try and buy a house right now. Oh, mama, you're going to get an education. And renting? Practically out of the question. We have our young men and women getting slaughtered like cattle over in Iraq because our president flat out lied to us about going to war there. We're constantly on alert concerning terrorists in our big cities, our power plants, our subways, our transportation system. We've done so little to protect ourselves, and instead we're spending huge sums of money fighting them over there so we don't have to fight them here. Boy, that worked out so well. And our freedoms are eroding with the Patriot Act, and Republican congressmen saying we need to bomb Mecca. Our reputation around the world is absolutely crumbled because of them not trusting Bush. My God, people. Just what big accomplishments and happy times are we supposed to be celebrating this last 4.5 years? Tell me. What's the good news you want us to promote? Are we winning the war against terrorism? Is America safer? Just what do you want us to say about that problem? Should we be like Bush and lie about it and say everything is peachy keen when it absolutely isn't? Should we stick our heads in the sand and ignore the problem? Or should we perhaps stay vigilant and point out the problems to the American people so that we can get to work solving them? I'm sorry. It's not a rosy picture right now. It's not rosy at all. If you think it is, you better take off those glasses. Most definitely, you better take off those glasses. Oh, let's see. We're going to go to the phone right now, and who's been waiting the longest? We got Bill in Toledo, Ohio. Hi, Bill.
Hi, good evening, Guy. How are you today?
Very good.
Hey, listen, Guy, I wanted to ask you now, is that that gas that you're talking about, $2.35 a gallon, is that high grade?
No. No. That's 87 octane.
You're regular?
Yeah.
A campaign.
Yeah, it is.
Well, now listen, Guy, I have a quote for you from somebody, and then I'll get on to what I was going to tell you. It says, here's a quote. It says, we're learning more every week about the extent to which the Republican Party's culture of corruption has polluted the Republican-dominated government of Ohio. Who's the quote by?
Oh, geez, probably, I hope, by a Republican.
No, that's Howard Dean, sir.
Howard Dean. Bill, you're governor right now, and I'm a former Buckeye.
Just wait a minute. You're talking about my governor.
Your governor is a golf-playing fool, evidently, from what I hear. I hear he's got more free golf under his belt than anybody I've ever heard of.
Oh, my God, Guy. Listen, don't get me going there today.
Well?
Because why I've called you today is I'd love to become a silver membership.
Well,
I'm only bronze, so I want to become silver, but you would have to know, you're supposed to be a pretty smart guy.
Oh, I don't know. It's a matter of opinion.
Well, in my opinion, I would think that you are.
Well, thank you.
So I have a small, usually it's the talk show or the radio show that has a quiz and you win something.
Mm-hmm.
But this is a chance for you to win something.
Oh, boy, here we go.
Okay, are you ready, Guy?
All right, I got the hand on the button.
Okay, this isn't going to go long. And listen, this is only a one-answer question.
All right.
You're going to have to listen, and then I will give you a fair amount of time to answer.
All right.
And then it's over.
I'm up to the challenge.
Are you ready, Guy?
Yes.
Okay. Well, now listen, Guy. There's a guy, his name is Mr. Dan Schroeder. I don't know if you've heard of him. But he's a representative of the head representative of the Board of Elections in Columbus, Ohio.
Mm-hmm.
And a certain person by the name of Big Pat Galena.
Oh boy, I like this. I think I got the answer to this, but go ahead, Ralph.
Representative Diebold.
Yeah.
Now listen now,
mm-hmm.
guy,
mm-hmm.
because this is going to be tougher than you
I'm
think.
I'm chomping at the bit.
Okay. He walked in and on the office on a January 9th of 04.
Uh-huh.
And he said, sir, this is Mr. Dan Schroeder.
Mm-hmm.
He says, sir, I have a check for $10,000.
Yeah.
And he says, I would like to take and make it out to you here and give it to you now.
Yeah.
Now, Mr. Dan Schroeder said, this is the worst thing I have ever done. I wish, my God, I'd have thrown him out of my office. But he took the check.
Yeah.
He took the check. And what's happened to Mr. Schroeder is he's been docked a month's pay.
Yeah.
So now we're going to get on to a little bit more here. Now it's that Mr. Deep Pockets Galena, who is a representative of Diebold,
mm-hmm.
He also has boasted that he has given $50,000 to a group of supporters of the great Secretary of State of Ohio, one Mr. Blackwell.
Mr. Blackwell.
Yes, sir. Okay.
The infamous
see where
Mr.
This is
Blackwell.
Leading.
Yeah.
I'm just about done, guy. And the
All right.
The question is coming up.
We got to move along.
Okay.
Keep it going.
Okay. And now, don't look at this in a bad light, guy.
I won't.
Okay. But Mr. Galena
mm-hmm.
has said that this money come out of his own pockets is no way was he representing Diebold.
Of course not.
Okay. Now, Guy, I'm going to cut this, and we're going to come to the chase.
All right.
This is the question that you must answer.
Do we have a drum roll? Okay. Not. Never mind. Go ahead.
All right. Here it is. Here's the question.
All right.
Okay. Now, on July the 20th of this year, Bush said he nominated a new ambassador to Germany. One Mr. William
Timken.
Timken was the chairman of bearing maker Timken Company of
Timken Canada. Roller Bearing Company, yes.
Right. Now, the question, Guy, what other board did Mr. Timken retire from?
I believe he was on the Hoover Vacuum Cleaner Board. And,
oh, shoot, Guy.
And I believe he was on the...
I sure do want to become a silverman.
Oh, geez, what other board did he retire from? You see, the thing is, I know this W.R. Timken. I've met him. What other board would he retire from?
He was...
Diebold.
Guy, you have just got yourself... oh, my gosh.
I have met W.R. Timken.
Have you really?
Yes, sir. I let the little cat out of the bag.
Let me tell you something. My mother worked at Timken Roller Bearing Company. I'm from Columbus, Ohio.
Yeah.
And she worked at Timken Roller Bearing Company for 20 years.
They had 5,000 employees at that plant, and it's closed up tighter than a drum right now, isn't it?
Where would that business have went to?
Oh, my. Of course, they had plants in South Africa, in Brazil, in the U.K., and in France as well as in Gaffney, South Carolina. Do I know something about Timken? Yes, I do.
Okay. Well, listen, Guy, you now have a new silver...
Hey, company. Bill, thanks very much.
Okay, listen, I appreciate talking to you this evening, and a great show, Guy.
Thank you. Thank you very much.
I want to say exactly one more comment, quick comment. I wanted to say what you said about this nomination. We have to keep our powder dry because I think it's going to be needed in the next couple of months.
Well,
and it's going to be needed, I think, for what Clinton went through. You're going to see the same thing Bush and Cheney and the rest of them going through. I absolutely believe that.
I hope you're right. Thank you, Bill.
Thank you, Guy. Bye-bye.
All right. Yes, our new ambassador to Germany, Mr. Timken. Ah, yes, Mr. Timken. I could tell you some stories about him, but I could tell you a lot of stories about him, but I won't right now. Let's go to somebody who's... we're going to go to Kelly in Oregon. It says, do I feel safer? Kelly, do you feel safer?
No, but that's actually a kind of a misdirection in my case because I never didn't feel safe to begin with.
Oh, okay.
So, you know, I didn't have the same kind of really strong reaction that the rest of my country people did. Not that I didn't think it was terrible and not that I didn't grieve for the families, just the same way that I grieved for my neighbors whose kids just lost their parents in a plane crash. which wasn't terrorism, or my mother's best friend who died of AIDS just recently, or any of the people out there. You know, we've got tragedy and horrible things happening within our borders continuously. We have people who treat each other terribly within our borders. We have all kinds of abusive situations and all kinds of horrific things that are happening to people that never make the light of day as far as the media is concerned. But when you call it terror, and when it comes from supposedly the outside, everybody is supposed to be so scared that Bush can get away with anything he wants to. And I'm sorry, but from the very moment, while I may have grieved for the act, I didn't grieve enough and I wasn't afraid enough to turn anything over to Bush, or to all of a sudden turn his failed administration around. He wasn't doing too good up to that point, was he?
No.
Nobody believed in him.
No.
And look what hay he made of it. I think it's about time that we stopped worrying about being scared. I wasn't scared to begin with.
No, I think most of the country was not scared. I'm more scared. I tell you this, and I know some of my friends, Republican friends, are not going to like me saying this. I'm a whole lot more scared of George Bush than I am any terrorist.
Yeah, I am a lot more. I will say that I'm a lot more concerned, because I am a lot more concerned about what's happened under George Bush than I am about the terrorists. That part is absolutely. I think you nailed that one.
Yeah.
And I'm not in a big hurry to run around being scared.
No, it's not going to do you any good, is it?
No, it's not going to do me any good. If I, you know, the number of things that can happen to a person, if you go through your life spending your time worrying about worst-case scenario all the time, even if they never happen, you had a pretty miserable life.
That's right.
I'd like to step forward with a little bit of courage and do what needs to be done without cowering in fear and giving in to whatever George Bush says he needs, whether it's the Patriot Act or whether it's going after Saddam Hussein that didn't have anything to do with it, or whatever it is. I don't need to give in to what George Bush needs because I'm cowering in fear that somebody might come along and come after me personally.
Sure.
Anyway, that's all I wanted to say.
Well, thank you for calling.
I had that response, and I haven't talked to you in a while. I just wanted to let you know that it's been a while, but it takes a long time to move 900 miles. That's a pretty big
Yeah, you moved a long ways.
Yes, 900 miles north.
Yeah.
And I'm really enjoying it up here because, I know you're in Florida. I shouldn't say that, but we're having a heat wave, and it's 86 today.
Ooh, yeah. Kelly, thanks so much for calling.
Okay, you're welcome.
Heat wave. I know one time I was up in the Canadian Rockies, and they were, it was like 85 and 87 or so in the middle of the summer up in the Canadian Rockies, and Banff and Jasper and up, and people were going crazy. Hey, we've got Republican Love coming up. If we can get the orchestra ready. Ron, is the orchestra ready to play? Ah, yes.
Now it's time for you to pull up a chair, sit back, and enjoy a few moments of Republican Love.
Everybody take a deep breath and relax. Get in the mood for this. And everybody on the phone, just hang on. I'll be right with you, okay? Don't go away, because I want to talk to each and every one of you. But right now, we've got a few minutes of Republican Love coming your way. Why don't you do the same as we do here? Pour yourself up maybe a nice cup of hot tea, some of that herbal tea, and lower the lights. Get in the mood for a few minutes of Republican Love. Or maybe you want something a little stronger. I don't know. Here are our letters this week from our adoring right-wing friends. You left-wing leaning stinko pinko. Stinko Pinko. That's, you know, I like that. My country is having problems because of people like you. As far as I'm concerned, people like you need to stand downrange of my bullets, you traitor, seditionist scumbag. By the way, Bill Clinton is a traitor too, along with that bitch of a wife of his, Democrat hater. Well, he doesn't like Bill and Hillary.
Can you imagine that? A Republican saying that? I can't. And this one's short and to the point. I just thought this one was, you are a big fat idiot. All liberals are the same. Name-calling, lying, cheating idiots, just like your leader, Slick Willie. Well, no, there's someone else. Someone else that doesn't. And I want you to know I am not a big fat idiot. I am not. I'm slimming down like you wouldn't believe. All right. and the next one. Now, this one's in all caps. I always like getting these ones all caps because that's like they're screaming at you. Rush is the source of true knowledge, not your liberal media controlled by the Clinton puppets like you. You people are just jealous of his fame and influence among the intelligent majority American people. You want to bet who's the majority? That's what I got to say to that. Now, this next one is from DMS-142. He didn't give me his name, DMS-142, and the subject is, all you liberals burn in hell. I don't know. I find it pretty ironic that you elitist faggot liberals claim to be pro-choice when you're against people having the choice to own a gun to protect themselves. Every liberal like... Did I ever say I was against somebody owning a gun to protect themselves? I have said I didn't think it should be an Uzi or a rifle with a big clip in it or anything like that. But you want to own a gun to protect yourself, you go right ahead. I have nothing against that. And he goes on to say, every liberal like you is a GD hypocrite. Now, I almost said that. You try and take away guns from all the law-abiding citizens, but then all the left-wing pieces of, like Chuck Schumer, Ted Kennedy, and Hillary Clinton, and that fat whore Rosie O'Donnell, who always say they want the Second Amendment taken away, have armed security and gun permits for themselves. It just goes to show you that liberals are the ones that are anti-choice and opposed to freedom, and that there's two rules that liberals set. Number one, the rules they're allowed to live by, and number two, the rules us ordinary folk live by. And I don't care how many of you pieces of blank liberals like you I piss off, I'll buy as many handguns and drive as many SUVs as I want. Screw you all, you liberal hypocrites. Ashcroft in 08. Now there's a new one, Ashcroft in 08. Thank you there from DMS-142. This one's from a guy named Michael Cheney. So your show is where the young mindless liberals of America come for their talking points. How does it feel to be the guardian of the cesspool of ignorance? I heard you say you would like to go to Iraq and see for yourself how it's going. If you do go, I hope you get to come home in a body bag. Mike Cheney. Well, thank you, Mike. That's a beautiful thought. A beautiful. Actually, it touches my heart. I've got a tear in my eye. The next letter. The number of... This one is a doozy. The number of the beast may well be 666, but its name is Guy James. You jaundiced, jumped up, vicariously pusillanimous piffle. Phew, is that a mouthful? You are so nauseatingly dim, you probably haven't the least idea why I have been moved to vent my feelings, however delicately, concerning your sniveling existence. Egoist is not a word I'd use to describe you, for although it poorly describes your self-centered little universe, the word assumes the presence of a cerebral cortex, something you clearly function without. I have seen maggots which have evoked greater pity in me than your voluptuously vile visage. I hope you die soon so mankind can be spared any more misery caused by your being. And that is from Harriet. Harriet, I don't know when's the last time I got a letter like that, but that's a dandy. And I got one more here for you. You are the best example. Harriet, boy, I got a couple of words in there I got to look up in the dictionary. You are the best example of a jerk that I have ever seen. Have they seen me? I don't know a single soul who has similar political beliefs as you. I don't know a single soul who distrusts our president like you do. I don't know anyone who doesn't think the war in Iraq is a good idea and that we are winning and making America safer and helping 50 million people in that region claim freedom and democracy. I listen to you and I wonder where you get your information. I don't hear any news sources say the same things you say or make ridiculous claims like you do. Believe me, you would do yourself and your listeners a huge favor by tuning into Fox News for a few days and hearing the truth about what goes on in this world. Well, let me get this straight. You want me to You want me to watch Fox News for a few days to get the truth? I firmly believe I could watch Fox News for a solid week and come away totally devoid of the truth. Britt Hume, John Gibson, O'Reilly, and the like wouldn't know the truth if it hit them upside the head. That's what I got to say about that. So ends a few minutes of Republican love.
This has been a few moments of Republican love.
You know, Johnny, I got through that. My blood pressure's fine. It is. And, you know, I thank all of my right-wing friends for having the courage to write the letters, and I thank you for your beautiful sentiments, as always. It's wonderful to know that I'm so well thought of in the right-wing community. It is, and it touches my heart. I want each and every one of you to know that I often shed a tear when I find out how much you love me. That's about it for this half hour of the program. We're going to pause for a break at the bottom of the hour. Don't look at me that way, Johnny. And we're going to be back with another half hour of the program coming up right after these words.
This is the Guy James Show.
Southwest Florida's official news, weather, and traffic station. Wink WNOG.
Of the family. Have an evil empire just like his dear old dad. Get him out of Vietnam. That doesn't look too bad. Junior should act like he's a good guy. Finish up my war and cover up his lies. Be evil and show no feelings to. Listen to DeChaney, who'll tell him what to do. Junior's in jeopardy. Carl Roof, see? Cut him off. Treat him unfairly. Nothing else matters. No siree. Nothing else but the legacy.
George, what are you doing? Are you, what are you doing, George?
Sorry there, Dick. He's just,
What, George, what are you doing?
Taking my son a little something. But he'll get to see it. Hopefully he'll get a chance to see it. Know what you're all about.
You and I. Chew that.
James Show. The phone lines are open. Call 1-888-602-7500. 7501-0203-04 right now and chime in. You're on The Guy James Show.
Jamming in the studio. Johnny finds the best stuff. Johnny's cool. Being a little bit of a, I'll let you in on a hint, being a little bit of a guitar player and singer myself, you know, I like that stuff. I do. But I digress. Let's get back to the phone. We've got some loyal listeners waiting on the phone. Oh, gee whiz. Some of them, they all wait. Thank you for waiting so long on the phone. I love you people. I really do. And again, we're getting notes from all over the place. People listening today are people in South Korea and Vietnam and Australia and up in the Finland, Norway, the UK, France, and a lot of folks in the United States of America. And we thank every single one of you for listening to the program tonight. Let's go to Eric in Vermont, and he wants to talk about our good friend, Carl Rove.
Well, Mr. James.
Hi, Eric.
We haven't spoken in a while, have
we? It has been a while, my friend. How you been?
I'm enjoying a beautiful, very hot summer in Vermont, but I love it.
Well, that hot summer will make for better maple syrup come next spring.
Is that what it is?
Yeah.
Actually, I wanted to say I was very glad that Bushy's beef on Democratic Underground called regarding the hearings that were yesterday morning.
Oh, yeah.
And haven't been very publicized in mainstream media. What's new, right? They can get on that, any of your listeners, if they would like to listen to that. It was originally held on C-SPAN 3. They have been rebroadcasting that. And any of your listeners that would like to go on cspan.org, the title would be Hearings on Security Implications on Revealing Covert Agents' Identity. Now, I would like to add to what Bushy's beef, because I think it's imperative that the American citizenry of this country fully understand this is not, repeat, is not a partisan issue.
No, certainly
not. If anybody wants to listen to this broadcast that was on C-SPAN, they need to understand that these are very dedicated, patriotic Americans, some Republicans, and it doesn't matter whether you're Republican or Democrat, everyone should be very concerned about what happened during that process of the Valerie Plame outing. It not only has anything to do with local politics within our country, it has to do with corrupting the whole process of the intelligence community, gathering information that protects us in terms of security. People that are the asset of covert agents that are working abroad trying to get people to help with intelligence to make our country more secure are not going to say, okay, let's protect them because we're going to be safe. Our families are going to be safe and everything else. They can't. Their whole operation, not just the front company that Valerie Plame was operating with weapons of mass destruction and the connections that she had, the whole process of the American, the United States intelligence community has been completely compromised by this because there has been no action regarding this for what? How long now?
Yeah, and it's just no big deal, right?
It's a very big deal, and it concerns everybody, and everybody
certainly
is
does.
Very concerned.
Eric, hang with me. There's a gentleman that testified on that in those hearings yesterday, James Marcinkowski, and you probably
Excellent.
Read his
testimony. Yes, he's an attorney with, I think Conyers brought him in.
Yeah.
He's in Michigan, I believe.
And let me read just a little bit of his testimony to warm some of you up to what this whole thing was about. And you'll have to read all of it. There's a lot of testimony from this gentleman. But let me quote him for just a moment. What is important now is not who wins or loses the political battle, who may or may not be indicted. Rather, it is a question of how we will go about protecting the citizens of this country in a very dangerous world. The undisputed fact is that we have irreparably damaged our capability to collect human intelligence and thereby significantly diminished our capability to protect the American people. Understandable to all Americans is a simple, incontrovertible, but damning truth. The United States government exposed the identity of a clandestine officer working for the CIA. This is not just another partisan dust-up between political parties. This unprecedented act will have far-reaching consequences for covert operations around the world. This is, his testimony is amazing, and he's right on target, just like you just mentioned.
I've listened to a couple of times, and some impartials over that. And I believe the testimony of, and I can't remember the colonel's name that goes back, retired, going back into Vietnam. I mean, these people are out there. They have been out there. They're all away from the intelligence community now actively. But these people are saying this is a national security issue. This is not Republican, Green Party, white with blue stripes, or any other party that happens to be running a political campaign. This is about national security, and this administration has severely compromised the intelligence community to protect the Americans of this country. And this, once you have outed that situation in terms of taking an intelligence officer and blowing that cover, it's going to take a long, long time before you regain the trust of those people that we are trying to contact to assist us to gather intelligence to protect the American people. And this is an issue for every American patriot.
You're exactly right. Right, left, or in between. It's an issue for everybody. Eric, thank you so much.
Thank you for letting me speak, sir.
Let's go to beautiful Naples, Florida. And Francis, are you with us? Hello?
Yes.
Are you with us? You're on the air.
Well, something happened. All of a sudden, I couldn't hear you.
Oh, okay.
No. You know, we all forget about Iraq not having water, electricity, schools, or streets while we're giving them freedom and liberty.
Uh-huh.
I don't understand what we think we're doing. No, my subject was that all of these people are... Can you hear me?
Yes, oh, certainly.
I can't hear you very well. Everybody's yelling about you criticizing Bill Nelson.
Mm-hmm.
Do you think the people who criticized Bill Nelson for voting for the bankruptcy bill understood the bankruptcy bill at all?
Oh, they couldn't have.
I know.
No.
And how could they raise their voices and not know what they were talking about? That was the worst thing that's happened to the middle-class people and poor people and years and years and years.
Well, it certainly was. And what's the gentleman from Tampa that's running for governor on the Democratic issue? Can't think of his name all of a sudden. I cornered him at a big...
Not Davis.
Yeah.
Davis.
I cornered... He
yeah.
voted for the bankruptcy bill,
yeah.
and I cornered him at a big soiree we were at, and he acted like I...
Howard Dean.
Yeah, and he acted like, well, who are you, and what do you know? Well, I happen to have read every word of that bill,
uh-huh.
And I'll bet you he didn't.
Well, you know, that somebody can collect your credit card bills and not make you pay your child support. You take your credit card bills before you pay your child support. That's criminal.
Well, and we got our good friend Joe Biden that voted for that, too. Of course, you know.
I know. And I told Bill Nelson, you know, we don't need another Zell Miller.
No.
We've got enough. We've had enough Zell Millers and Dixiecrats and over the years that we're trying to strengthen our party. And we can't strengthen our party as long as they go along with George Bush.
They can't strengthen our party either with people who aren't true to themselves.
I know.
And to the party. And,
I know. And you know, it just seems as if some people are absolutely brain dead.
Yeah.
that they don't even look at. Well, I say it every day. I don't know what's wrong with these people.
Well, you know, we call it like we see it on this show, and if he doesn't do what we like, we're going to say it. I don't care if he's a Democrat or Republican.
I don't care.
Any difference? No.
I don't care.
Thanks so much for your call.
Okay, you're more than welcome.
Good to hear from you.
Okay.
You know, she brought up Zell Miller. How many of you heard this about our good friend Zell? Lunatic Miller. You all saw his performance at the Republican convention, right? Do you ever see anybody that looked more crazed than he did? That crazed, goofy look on his face that night. Georgia political analyst Bill Shipp reports that former Senator Zell Miller, the guy who piously brags about his own integrity, essentially stole $80,000 from Georgia taxpayers upon leaving office when he's a governor. According to Shipp, who was quoted in an WSB TV investigation, Miller pocketed more than $60,000 in taxpayer funds earmarked for the entertainment and other expenses at the governor's mansion. Miller also picked up a check for more than $20,000 for unused leave, a sum to which he was not entitled as a constitutional offer. Now, hilariously, Zell explained himself by saying he was technically eligible to take the mansion money as his own because no one said he couldn't. Of course, every other living governor, from Jimmy Carter to Sonny Perdue, told that they did not consider the mansion money theirs and that they would not have taken it. The cash was meant for use at the mansion, not for lining the occupant's pocket. Zell, you lousy windbag. Oh. Zeller Miller, what a disgusting individual. Let's go to Bill in Fort Myers. Hi, Bill.
Hi, you just made my whole week about Zell Miller. I'm so happy to hear that. I'm laughing.
Yeah. Good, straightforward, honest Zell Miller.
Oh, yeah. What's he going to use for a defense? Spitballs? That ought to be good.
Yeah.
I want to say something good about the Republicans. You know, you and I are liberal Democrats, and I always thought we were at the bottom of the food chain, but we're not. The right wing hates the moderate Republicans much more than they dislike us.
That's true.
And
I agree with you, Bill.
And what really drove it home to me was that the Bush administration is getting ready to put the short end to the Veterans Administration. And, you know, how can you run a war and have tax cuts at the same time? Well, somebody's got to get the short end, and it's going to be the VA. And at the time, New Jersey Republican Christopher Smith, who was the chairman of the House of the Veterans Administration, stood up to the leadership in the House, and he got 30 Republicans to sign a letter to give to Tom DeLay and Dennis Hastert. Every one of those people on the letter were removed from every committee they were on, and they paid a huge price for trying to stand up for the veterans. And that's what we're getting from the Bush administration, photo opportunities, but when the money is required, we're not going to get it.
You know, Bill, I'm still waiting for that call from my white right-wing friends saying that they're proud to have Tom DeLay as their majority leader. I have yet to get that call.
And secondly, on this, you're right about I want the Democrats to fight that Supreme Court judge too, but that is a difference of opinion. This thing with Valerie is something that's impeachable, and that's where the spotlight has to be. If people, I wasn't alive then, but back in the 1940s, the Ku Klux Klan was so strong in this country that they had demonstrations in Washington, D.C. of thousands and thousands of KKK people, and we didn't win that war with battleships or planes. Those people had to be infiltrated. And you can imagine what would happen to an undercover person if the KKK figured out who you were.
That's right.
And now somebody in the Bush administration has betrayed an undercover person. And President Bush is on record as saying that if anybody has anything to do with that leak was going to be dealt with. And now he's backtracked to say if they did anything illegal. So he's backtracking away from it. And
sure.
If we're ever going to get Al-Qaeda, we're going to have to infiltrate them all over the world, and who's going to step forward to infiltrate the Al-Qaeda when the top people in our country could betray them?
That's right. That's a great point, Bill, a great point. And I bring up something to you. You know, you mentioned the KKK earlier and all. Did you know that Zell Miller
was a good and dear friend and guy kind of helped get his political start from Lester Maddox.
No, I sure didn't know that.
Yeah, I thought you might like to know.
Well, he sure got a lot of room to criticize everybody else. Yeah. Oh, one, this is a trivia thing, but you know who Christopher Hitchens?
Hitchens, I sure
is
do.
He's smart. He's an intellectual from Britain. And he brought up that the very first treaty that the United States sent to anybody, this would have been back when all the founders were there, contained this quote, "We are not a Christian country." So, and I don't want this to be an attack on Christians because, let's change it to the people of faith. If we didn't have the people of faith in our country, it would be a much worse country. But the people that call themselves Christians, who are no more than a part of the Republican Party and are getting a tax exemption, and I heard one on this week on TV saying that the 9/11 can be traced directly to Bill Clinton for being so inactive, that that these few Christians are really making a mockery out of the real Christians that are out there.
I absolutely agree with that. I most certainly do.
Well, thanks so much, Guy, and good night to you.
Bill, thank you. Thank you very much for calling. Bill always makes a lot of sense. You know, all of our callers, I'm proud of our callers. I would venture to say the average IQ of our callers is a good many points higher than some of the callers on some of the right-wing programs. I would bet you money on that. But if we'd sit down and have a test, for example, on facts, on political facts and facts of what's happens in current events and so forth, there is no doubt in my mind who'd win that contest. No doubt whatsoever. Especially considering the fact that 70% of the people that voted for George Bush believed that they actually had found the WMDs in Iraq. What does that tell you? Let's go to Jason in Cape Coral. Hi, Jason.
Hey, Guy, I had a comment. A while ago, I called you and asked you why you thought anyone would vote for George Bush. And you told me that they could put any pig up there with a Republican pin on his jacket, and they would probably vote for him. And I didn't really understand that at the time, how you could just vote for a party and not a person. So I've been listening quite a bit to all these crazy people on the radio, and I've noticed this real big trend that if you are a Republican, that means you have to like George Bush. If you're a liberal, that means you're just hardcore Democratic. They just cattle people into all these beliefs. If you're a Democrat, then you're way off the left-hand side. You believe in all these crazy things, and if you're on the right-hand side, you have to be a conservative. You have to like George Bush. You have to believe this bogus war. And it just disgusts me. There is no wiggle room. You're either one or the other.
I think I proved you wrong just a few minutes ago, Jason. Did you hear me talking about Bill Nelson?
Yes, I did.
I often criticize Democrats. I've excoriated many of them on this program. I don't fit in that category at all. I really don't. If a Democrat's got a gum and I give it to them, I don't care who they are. Really don't.
I'm not really. I didn't intend that to be more towards you. I hear Bill O'Reilly and Hannity, and they say, "Oh, if anyone's a Democrat, they're an extreme liberal."
Those are words they like to throw around, the extremist, and all that. That's for sure.
Yeah, they do that all the time.
It's a battle of rhetoric going on between the two sides. There's no question about that. And whoever.
And also, I just wanted to say that I'm very happy to see that George Bush is just failing in everything he tries to do. Hopefully, everyone soon will have to admit that this war was just made up from the beginning to the end. 1,700 American men and women are dead for no reason. 15,000 are wounded. You can get that on antiwar.com.
Yeah.
And I just hope the truth comes out, and it's coming out a little bit every single day, and it just makes me happy.
Yeah, well, I think we're finding out more and more every day the devious process we went through to get into that war, and I think it was the Well, it's very repulsive, what we went through to get into that war and the stories we heard from our very own government. And I don't care if it had been Bill Clinton, George Bush, or whoever did this. I would be dead set against it. And I'm no dove. I'm no dove at all. But the circumstances surrounding our entrance into this illegal invasion in Iraq was just plain pitiful. Jason, thank you for your call.
Thank you.
Very good to hear from you. I don't care. If they've got it coming, I'll give it to them. I don't care. And I make my Democratic friends mad. I've got people in Lee County and Collier County and Hendry County, people around here angry with me because I dared to criticize certain Democrats. I don't care. I do not care. If you got it coming and you're a Democrat, Guy James is going to give it to you. That's all there is to it. And I don't mind saying so. I've told Howard Dean that personally. I've told Terry McAuliffe that personally. And I've told some Democratic office holders personally. Now, you know, what do they care? But I've told them. And speaking of that, I want to take a moment or two to let you know something I want you to think about for this week. Johnny, let me know what time it's got to be, okay? I want to let you know about something I want to talk about next week, and I want you to be thinking about it all week long if you can, okay? Think about this all week long. And, you know, speaking of criticizing the either party, who's going to have the guts to risk his political skin and push for a real, workable solution to the border problem? Who's going to be the first one from either party to stand up and say, hey, let's make an honest effort to close the borders to illegals from anywhere? Who's going to do it? Oh, I admit it's going to take an extraordinary amount of political courage for one of our congressmen to stand before the American public and offer some kind of a proposition that we must protect our borders at all costs. Who's going to have the guts to ignore the political pitfalls that accompany such an initiative? Who's going to be? Indeed, who's going to risk losing his seat in the House or the Senate in order to make America safer and protect our health care system and our schools and our general infrastructure from being overburdened with illegal immigrants? Now, before any of you start accusing me of being a bigot or a racist, I want you to know here and now that I live among many, many folks from south of our border, and I love them. And people that know me know I love them. In fact, they've got several ingrained traits that make me, as an Anglo, absolutely envious of them. They're good, decent, hardworking people who love their families and respect their fellow man. And I've got the greatest admiration and respect for the Latino community. I do. However, to protect those Hispanic people who've done the right thing and gone through the proper procedures to become citizens of this great country, we need to put a stop to illegal entry in this country. It's in the interest in protecting the jobs of our Hispanic citizens that we need to stop illegal entry. And true, it's a political hot potato. You know it is, but we simply got to stop ignoring it and come up with a meaningful solution to the problem, something that means something. But who's going to have the cojones to stand up before the American public and address the problem in a straightforward manner and risk the political smears that are going to come with it? Because they'll be there. You know they will, from both parties. Who's going to risk being tarred and feathered by being called a racist and a bigot? Who's going to risk bringing down the wrath of the special interest groups upon them? Who's going to do that? I say this to our leaders of both parties. It's as if the problem doesn't exist. And believe me, folks, it most definitely is the elephant in the room, and it's getting bigger and bigger every day, and it's not going to go away. The longer it's put off, the more difficult the solution's going to be. It's got to be addressed now. But to go back to my original question, who's going to have the guts to take it on? Nobody that I can see right now. Who among our elected elites going to take a chance on being attacked by the other side for political gain? You know the opportunity will be there for the mudslinging, no matter which side takes this issue on. And I think we Democrats have a great opportunity available to us right now.
I believe we should champion this issue and take it to the American public. Put it at the forefront of our political agenda. What America doesn't want our, what American doesn't want our borders protected? What American doesn't want our health care system and our school system protected from being overburdened with non-citizens? Who better to explain this to the common man than the Democratic Party? It's about protecting our jobs and our general well-being as a nation. So I think we should encourage our Democratic leaders to take up this issue and run with it. It's something that's got to be done, and it's an issue which will resonate with the voting public. I guarantee that. Don't worry about the political fallout. Just go with it. Let the chips fall where they may, and have some guts for a change and do the right thing with this issue. You've got no guts, Mr. Republican or Mr. Democrat Congressman, if you don't approach this issue and get something done about it. Those are my two cents worth, and I hope you'll think about that this week, and we're going to talk a lot about it next week. I'm so grateful to all of you for listening to this program tonight. So grateful to having you along with us, and we're going to be back next week with an even bigger and better show for you. I'd like to thank Johnny and Erica and Ron over there and Lila, everybody, for helping with the show. You're listening to The Guy James Show. Thanks a lot.
Listening to The Guy James Show, the cooperative effort of a talented and dedicated staff. Executive producer Gene Charles. Production director Johnny Johnson with J2K Productions. Program coordinator Lila St. John. We thank the staff for their continued dedication, and we thank you for your interest in our show. You've heard from the radical right. Now all that's left is the truth. This has been The Guy James Show.
Southwest Florida's official news, weather, and traffic station. Wink WNOG.
Fox News Radio, I'm Ken Duffy. Tips and leads, admissions and mistakes. London police alerted to a clue in the bushes of Wormwood Scrubs, a clue possibly linked to this week's failed bombings.
The authorities are investigating, looking into a suspicious package that was found this morning in the northwest portion of the city, specifically a neighborhood called Little Wormwood Scrubs. The authorities say that a member of the public notified them that there was a package located in the bushes. The authorities arrived there, and they now say the package could be linked to the bombs that failed to properly detonate last Thursday.
Fox's David Lee Miller. Police now say they shot the wrong man yesterday in a subway station, a man they initially said was connected to the investigation. John Charles de Menezes was just heading to work that morning. Sky News also reporting a connection between the July 7th and July 21st bombings.
He is known by Democrats and Republicans alike as a brilliant thinker, a fair-minded judge, and a decent man.
President Bush on his Supreme Court nominee John Roberts, the weekly presidential radio address focusing on upcoming Senate confirmation hearings.
Judge Roberts has a stellar record of achievement. He is a man of sound judgment and the highest integrity. He has the qualities Americans expect in a judge: experience, wisdom, fairness, and civility. He has profound respect for the rule of law.